What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Smoking Tire Podcast, both the last episode of 2019 and the first episode of 2020 this week. These episodes are brought to you by Auto Tempest. Listen, folks, you can make a lot of money in your life and you can be successful, but the one thing you have a finite amount of, no matter how successful and rich you get, is time. And Auto Tempest can save you time. Whether you're thinking about buying a car, selling a car, or just browsing around to see what's available, Auto Tempest brings all the major used car listing sites together into one place, plus a bunch of smaller ones, so you don't have to re-enter all your stupid search criteria over and over and over again. It'll even let you compare with results from all of Craigslist, eBay Motors, and Facebook Marketplace. Yes, that is correct, folks. It saves you a time. You don't have to check everywhere yourself individually. Auto Tempest is just it's a great resource to have, because anything that combines all the individual options the internet provides you into one easy to view area is good. AutoTempest.com. All the cars, one search. Check it out. We are also brought to you by the Thinkware dash cams. Their latest and best dash cam is called the U1000. It's now available. It has a native 4K front and 2K rear resolution cameras, so it can get inside your car and outside your car. It can save you money because it's got speed camera and red light camera alerts, or it can make you a safer driver because it actually has built-in lane departure and front collision warnings. With the convenient remote live view and parking impact alert cloud features, you can instantly check on your car or be notified of potential hit and runs. The U1000 and Thinkware's full range of dash cams are available online and in-store at Thinkware.com, Best Buy, and Amazon in both the U.S. and Canada. But if you want the deal, you got to go to Thinkware.com. Thinkware.com, here's the deal. Smoke20 is the code. SMOKE20. Smoke20 is the code at Thinkware.com, and you can get 20% off any regular price Thinkware dash cam. Code SMOKE20 at Thinkware.com. Last but most certainly not least is Crown & Caliber, guys. Crown & Caliber has been my watch sponsor for the last 2.5 years, and here's how they can help you. I'll just start off with the code. TST175 is the code, and that'll get you $175 off your first watch purchase at CrownAndCaliber.com. Now I'll tell you why it works. First off, in only very rare circumstances do you want to buy a watch brand new. Most of the time, you want to buy a watch pre-owned. Almost all of my watches are pre-owned watches, and I'll continue to buy pre-owned watches. They're taken care of really well, and Crown & Caliber has a staff of in-house technicians and watchmakers to make sure that the pre-owned watch you're getting works flawlessly, even if it's a vintage piece. Crown & Caliber is also great if you want to get out of a watch. Maybe you want to trade in, trade up, trade down, trade laterally, or just sell your watch. For instance, I am trying to condense my personal collection upwards, and so I want fewer, nicer watches. And so I just did a trade that involved a Rolex Submariner and a Rolex Explorer being traded for a AP Royal Oak, which is delightful, and a watch that I will wear more than the watch I traded out. That's important, wearing it. So I could do that deal easily with Crown & Caliber. When you're buying watches online, it's worth it to pay a little more to get that peace of mind. And with Crown & Caliber, you know the watch you see on the website is the watch you're getting, and you also know it's going to work. They guarantee it. So go to CrownAndCaliber.com, use code TST175, and get yourself $175 off your first watch at CrownAndCaliber.com. All right, on this episode of the show, it's me and Zach in studio. We haven't done a cruise show in a minute, so we are just catching up. I talk about the Saleen S1 race car that I drove. We talk about, what else, the Lamborghini Aventador SVJ that I drove. Well, there's a lot more. There's a lot of your questions, frankly. We go off into some tangents on this one. It's me and Zach Cruz Show on the Smoking Tire Podcast.
It's December the 26th. About half the country or half the city has been like, holiday's over, back to work. Everyone else is like, fuck this shit, which has led to an interesting day today because, like, a bunch of the things I wanted to do this morning ended up being closed.
You know? Like what?
Just, like, a couple businesses that I had to deal with are, like, not around. And, like, the healthy place I was going to go to my lunch with this guy that was walking distance was, like, not open. And so I ended up at the ramen place eating, like, a huge bowl of ramen, which is not the good way to get your energy up before doing a podcast.
It's just, like, fat and carbs.
This guy I hadn't seen since college, and he was like, I found a great ramen place, and you know Yamadaya's gone, like... It's not gone, but it sold like a year ago, so you can't go there anymore because overnight they changed the ramen. It's not as good.
Wow.
Yeah, you can't go there anymore. And then my other favorite place went out of business. And so fortunately, it was delicious. Unfortunately, I have the itis.
Right. Unfortunately, you ate ramen.
Unfortunately, I ate ramen for lunch. And I continue day three of embarrassing eating decisions that I've made. Which, fuck, I just beat the shit out of myself for eating so bad in the holidays.
I mean, we're all doing it.
I know.
Like, I mean, I've eaten at your house like two out of the last three nights.
I know. That's the problem. I can only blame so much because not only did I eat it, I cooked it.
Well, we're all doing it. I brought two pies over and it was four people.
Yeah. Nobody's
innocent.
We only
opened one.
Nobody's innocent on Christmas.
No one's getting out alive. Man.
And it's bad. It's bad when you try and... I went to my wife's family's house for pre-Christmas, the 24th, which was down in like 100 miles south of us. So I'm like, I might have to drive home later, so like I'm not going to drink. So like, but my sister-in-law, you know, she's like, I got this new dab rig. So I was like, oh, I won't drink, but like I'll try this new like electronic dab rig all-in-one system that looks like one of those... aroma air freshener things.
Yeah, I'm not going to drink, but I'm going to prize fight.
I'm not going to drink, but I'm going to find the intersection of marijuana and drugs and be right there. So you fucking do a couple of these things. Well, now you're like, now you're going after blocks of Parmesan cheese. You know, and now your off switch is just completely disabled for food. And so, of course, the irony was Hannah ended up driving home. Hannah's got this metabolism that's so crazy. You know, she's a little older than me, but she does double workouts every day. And, you know, she's got this like race car metabolism. So like you saw it probably actually last night, maybe one of the other nights on Hanukkah when you came over. But like Hannah will get drunk and then sober again, like before dinner.
Mm-hmm.
She can get drunk in a glass of wine and then be stone cold sober again in like 30 minutes. It's actually very funny to watch because she can get drunk multiple times in an evening.
Really?
Yeah, the circle can continue.
Wow.
But like, you know, she got drunk at like 4 p.m. and was completely sober at 4:40 and drove home at like, you know, 10. And I was like completely passed out because I'd had like 37 dabs from this thing. I mean, like, I'm not going to drink.
And several pounds of cheese.
And all the cheese, like, all the cheese in fucking Brooklyn. Yeah, but I'm completely embarrassed in my eating decision. After, like, the month of December up until Christmas was being really good.
Well, Christmas week is almost over.
I know. I'm sure this is what the podcast audience wants to fucking hear from a car show that's been...
I mean, they're all doing the same thing. Someone right now is sitting there eating pie, like, with a spoon, and they're just like, breakfast, yeah? That's true.
Three times this month, I've thrown out all the desserts.
Really?
Because we've had Thanksgiving, you know, there was a Thanksgiving, and then there was, my birthday, and then there was the Hanukkah dinner, and then the Christmas, and so each time people have brought desserts that, like, thank fucking God Vinny's gone. Because Vinny's just like, for those who don't know about Vinny, Vinny doesn't drink and Vinny doesn't do drugs. Vinny's vice is baking.
Yeah.
And Vinny fucking bakes like a lot. Like he was like, you know those people that are like, I stop myself from eating snacks by saying, if I'm going to eat it, I have to make it myself. And like that resistance of like, I'm not really going to bake a cake now, am I? That stops some people. But Vinny, it's like, that's his thing. He's like, I'm not going to eat sweets unless I bake them. But he bakes like 4 days a week. And then when he bakes like 50 cookies.
That blockade works in the beginning because you're like, well, I don't know how to bake.
Right.
So I'm not going to bake it, and I don't know how to do it. But he figured out how to do it, and now it's easy for him.
Yeah.
So he can just crank out anything, and it's no problem.
He can bake now without recipes.
That's a problem.
And that's
because it's chemistry.
Yeah, because you can only buy sugar and flour in big fucking bags. So you're inevitably buying a couple of recipes worth each time you go to the store.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can just wake up one morning and like, what is that? Oh, I made Cinnabon. Like, what?
Why?
You shitbag. What are you doing?
4 o'clock in the morning.
Trying to eat a banana.
He gets up at 4 and works out, and then he bakes Cinnabon.
Right. He'll get up. Yeah, he gets up crazy early, and I hear him, you know, go down to the gym, and he works out from 5 to 6 a.m., and then immediately creates a terrible breakfast that all of us could smell.
And he just goes in a circle.
Fucking Vinny. Anyway.
This could be the healthiest week of your life,
it
really
could have been. Well, you know what? You know what
still
was
better.
What actually legit was Thanksgiving. The week of Thanksgiving, I was by myself in the house. Everybody was gone, and I ate super healthy. I cleared out all the snacks, and I ate super healthy. It was great. I lost like 6 pounds a week Thanksgiving.
Whoa!
I did. I went to 2 Pilates classes, so I was really like dying. I probably drop 3 pounds every time I do a Pilates class in water weight, and it's like dripping on the floor. It's disgusting, but like, it's all fucked now. It's okay. It's okay. We're still in the same belt loop. We'll get this back.
It's okay. As the forums used to say, it's like, oh, December. Everyone's bulking in December. It's okay.
Bulking.
It's okay. You're not getting weight. You're bulking right now.
Bulking.
It's not. It's not swimsuit weather anyway.
I know. It's but. Here we are, and I had ramen for lunch, which I'm embarrassed about, but we'll get through it. Let's talk about cars. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Smoking Tire Podcast, day after Christmas. Let's see. Since the last time we recorded, because we recorded a bunch of shows.
Yeah.
Probably too many.
Just about
too many shows.
One show over, yeah.
Yeah. And so I actually, since we last recorded, I drove the Porsche 962, the Koenig 962, which I drove to Radwood. The last time we recorded was before Radwood. So I drove that in the rain. I drove the new Aventador SVJ. I drove my Aston Martin to Palm Springs and back, which is the longest I've driven in that car in over 10 years.
Really?
Longest trip I've taken.
It's like 100 miles each way.
120 each way.
Okay.
And then I drove the Saline S1 Cup race car. Which allegedly, if you can believe Celine and his team, if you can scroll up on it's there, Zach, a little more. One more. There it is. One more. There. Right. Blue.
Well, we talked about the design of that with, I can't remember the guess, but.
Right. And I figured that out. So the Celine S1. So for those of you looking at the image right now, from certain angles, it really strongly resembles a Cayman GT4. From other angles, it resembles a Lotus Evora. From other angles, it has elements of both. I think it's a attractive, inoffensive mid-engine design. You know what I mean? Like, it's not ugly. It's, you know, sort of middle of the road in the same way like the Genesis G70 is middle of the road. There's elements of other cars, but combined in a pretty tasteful way. So when what Zach is talking about is there's a car from France from like 4 or 5 years back called an Artega GT. And so and if you look at the photos back to back, the cars are quite similar looking. And so basically here's how this worked. And I just want to say that I'm not doing investigative journalism here. This is the story that was told to me by Celine and that I am taking at face value, okay? I asked about this. I was like, yo, guys, you know, your car is pretty good looking, but it looks an awful lot like the Artega GT. Can we talk about that? And they said, yeah. There's a Chinese company that has the rights to the Artega GT. They approached Celine, or they're working with Celine to build a new sports car, and they said, we've got the rights to this car. Maybe you can build something off of this car. Okay, like make this car, because this car was never federalized, this Artega thing. And I've never seen one in person. I've never seen one move under its own power. Allegedly, it's a real car. But what Steve Celine says, who was out at the track for a test, he said, basically, the Ortega was a piece of shit. And in many ways, it couldn't be federalized. Like, they couldn't modify it enough to federalize it for U.S. Whereas the Salinas one that they're selling is a U.S. federalized, like, homologated car. So they said the center section, the cockpit section, the doors, the design is largely taken from the Ortega GT. The entire front and rear clips are new, which is true. And in fact, they had three different front clips to show there. They had the Cup, which is the car that we drove. The Cup is the race car that is the test bed for what will be the street car. And this is it, the photo. It's a one make series. So I think they've got like 15 of these things. Apparently, they all were off to a bit of a rough start. They had some reliability issues. There was some fires and some DNFs and various issues in the racing. There were no issues when I drove the car. So, you know, I don't know. They said it's ongoing development, and they've got a new head design, and they've done a bunch of stuff. And all right, cool.
How many laps did you do when you drove it?
I could have done probably 100. I was a little personally stuck on time, so I did like a 6-lap orientation session, and then probably about another 7 laps, for the video.
Okay.
And it was a thermal, so I knew the track. The car, the race car I drove, so it didn't really have much of an interior. You know, it's a race car. But they said chassis, suspension design, powertrain, except for the gearbox, which has a sequential, it's not Hollinger, it's another company that starts with an H. Not Hurst, it's not Hollinger, but it was a sequential race gearbox.
Like Haas? No.
No. Oh, it's going to come to me at exactly the wrong fucking time. Whatever. It's like the X-Track one from the Hyundai RM. Like, it's just a race box. It's got 3 pedals, and once you're moving, you don't use the clutch anymore. You just use, you know, whatever. It's a race box. The street car will have a manual first, a Getrag manual transaxle, followed by some type of dual clutch later. The race car was like 2,600 pounds. It had 450 horsepower. It was fucking quick. It was quick. And it was similar in a lot of ways to the Evora. Similar size, similar kind of proportions. the brakes are manual. The steering is manual. And I don't wish either of those things were different. I think the car is light enough as is that a manual steering rack is fine. Now, I didn't parallel park it.
Right.
You know.
Well, on racetracks, you're not, you know, usually crossing over the 90-degree mark for corners, so that helps a lot.
Correct. The one place, it had a butterfly steering wheel on it, which I hate butterfly steering wheels, especially in a GT race car. Because, for the exact reason that I hate them, it came up in my test. You'll see in the video. The car has really nice downforce. It's very stable in pretty much everywhere except braking into the 120 degree hairpins. There's 2 of them at thermal. You could get some oversteer, which in the butterfly steering wheel becomes a bit right. of a problem. And in a car with turbo lag, if you lose the wheel and you then enter an oversteer situation on braking, you are now into lag in second gear and you can't power your way out of it. You would have needed to gone to first. So there's one section where I kept getting a little oversteer and ending up in sort of a bog crossed up situation. But in every other way, it was overall, it was really fun. It was definitely not shit.
What engine's in? I remember Bozy was tweeting. He was excited about their engine.
So here's where I don't. There should be a straightforward answer to this. It's a 2.2 liter turbocharged and 4-cylinder. That's the short version of it. The long version is, where does it come from?
Mm-hmm.
Celine says it's their own engine. Bozy, upon looking at my video of the engine, says, which I, do you have it? You have it in Google Drive.
I do.
Did you edit it already?
No.
Okay, so Bozy says it's a Focus RS engine modified. I said, okay, do you make your own blocks? And they said, yes. So I said, okay, so it's not just a de-stroked Focus RS motor. And they said, no, it's not just that, but it's based on Ford's architecture. So, all right. I think a safe bet to say it is a heavily modified version of the Focus RS engine.
Okay.
I think that's probably the close enough to the truth to have integrity. It's a version of that. It revs up pretty nice. You got to keep it on boost. You know what I mean? And so Eric Curran, who was their pro driver, was saying that he likes to drive with his right foot, one foot driving pretty much, whereas some of the racing drivers do left foot braking. I tried it both ways. I found it better with left foot braking because as you're coming through the corners, you really need that little 2% of throttle is enough to keep the turbo spooled but not making power. You can kind of pre-spool the turbo with your foot. So you're ready. So it's more ready when you're good to get out of there. Overall, this thing was really fun. I had a great time driving it. It was on slicks, and so it was a little sketchy when the tires were cold. But by like lap three,
but the balance felt good. What do you know? What the wheelbase is? Because looking at the photos of this compared to the Artega GT, it looks like the S1 is longer.
Well, they
slightly.
They swear they changed like everything.
I'm not trying to be disparaging towards them. I believe them because, looking at the kind of cockpit area, the slope is about the same as the Artega was, but this whole tail looks much longer. So I'm wondering if it has like a longer wheelbase.
I don't know.
Is much shorter.
Yeah, I'm not really sure. Once they were really dwelled on how much had to be re-engineered completely, I kind of dropped it. And ultimately, it doesn't really matter that much.
No, I'm not trying to find holes in their story. I'm genuinely, do you know what the wheelbase was and how did that affect the handling?
They sent me a press kit. I'm writing a review for Road and Track and I'll write some of the more technical details in that. My video is five laps of driving and I think it's a fun video. The car looks and sounds pretty cool and goes pretty fast and is well represented. Look, it was a race car.
Yeah.
So I think there's a long road from race car to road car. You know what I mean? It's fast. You got to believe me on this one. You don't have to believe me. You'll see in the video. It's fucking fast. Eric said it's 4 seconds a lap faster than a GT4 Club Sport on mid-size racetracks, which I believe. They have so I drove the cup version, which is what the one make drivers drive, right? They've also got a GT4 version that they're going to run in GT4 next year.
Okay.
So to go from cup to GT4, they add 300 pounds of lead in the passenger seat, pig irons. They take out 35 horsepower and they put more drag on it.
Wow.
So they had to slow it down considerably to run it in GT4.
Because this it has 450 horsepower in cup form.
Yeah,
I mean that's.
Wait, I'll tell you. It feels.
No joke.
I mean, it's a fast car.
Yeah,
it's unquestionably a fast car. It's almost a little. Thermal is such a nice place, but it doesn't have a lot of long straightaways, and so it's a lot of short squirts in between tight corners, at thermal. I would say that it is the most at the higher speed, the mid to high speed sections, extremely stable and sticky. And when you're at the very, very low speed stuff, those really tight hairpins is where, and when you start to get a little crossed up is where the steering geometries get a little weird and different. I don't think they've factored in drifting.
Yeah, of course. It's not meant for that, right?
No.
I mean, if you can correct.
But I don't think they factored in for oversteer moments as much.
And in a race, you shouldn't experience oversteer unless there's like an issue or something on the track. Like it can happen.
Right.
But I don't think the Audi R19 would oversteer very great.
Right. No, I think the geometries probably change in an undesirable way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. And so, what they're trying to do right now, I think they're trying to get more folks to sign up for their series next year, which actually It's racing is so expensive.
Yeah, I mean they have their number here.
Yeah, it's like $300,000 for the season, right?
It's $168,000 per season for a driver, and it's two drivers to a team.
Right, and so that's two races a weekend, and it's 7 weekends a year. And the good news is the tracks are like their schedule is dope. It's like Road America, you know, Road Atlanta. I think there's really good tracks on there.
Watkins Glen, Portland.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. So and so it's super expensive by anyone's standards except by the person who's raced 911 Cup or Ferrari Challenge or Lambo Trofeo or any of those, which are actually a lot more. It was neat. I think it's promising. I think if they can turn this car into a street car that has a reasonable amount of refinement and build quality and is not a piece of shit, it could be a winner. I mean, it could be a real, because look, they're saying manual gearbox. They're saying with a dual clutch down the road, they're saying a target curb weight of 3,000 pounds with an interior. Target power is 450 for the street. That sounds great. That sounds awesome.
How did Celine like get their claim to fame before the their hypercars and all that stuff? Like modifying Mustangs for GT class, yeah, or Mesa and stuff
racing
like that.
Mustangs,
and
yeah,
doing,
yeah,
and
yeah,
doing well, like, yeah, just like Roush, like all the others, right?
Yeah, they won races with Mustangs, and then they started building street Mustangs based on. I mean, I think the kind of Celine Mustangs that I want, that I'm into, that like the that really are the collectible ones, like. They put whole different engines in them. Like the Celine, like the Mustang came with a 302, like, but the Celine was a 351. Like it was an entirely different engine. You can't do that shit anymore. They're not doing that now, you know, and nobody could. No one sells a car with an entirely different engine in the aftermarket anymore.
It's like, too expensive.
It's just not done. And so they did that. And then with the S7, I don't think the S7 was a wonderful street car.
I thought it looked awesome.
It did.
Like, it was so cool looking. I mean, I was the right
Gotham
age
Gotham Dream
that.
Cars had one.
Really?
We had one we rented out. Wow. It was fucking stupid as hell. Nobody ever rented it. It was very dumb. And it was tiny. And it was like, it was ridiculous. Yeah. It was completely absurd. In the same way that Porsche 962 Koenig street car is completely absurd.
It's very like, much like that.
Yeah, it was very dumb to have as a street car, but what we all know is the S7 as a race car was fuck balls crazy, and it won. I think it won the championship. Didn't they win a world endurance championship with an S7 race car?
I will look. It's just, man, it was. I thought it was so cool looking when it came out.
That's a race car.
Yeah,
and you know what they told us? There's 100 S7s ever made. Two of them live at Thermal.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like the CLK GTR. It's that same era when all the companies were making like homologation specials.
Well, for this particular series, and I don't remember what group it was, what the class was, but like you had to build the homologation car, and I think I don't know if it's
the S7 twin turbo, of course.
Yeah, but the twin turbo was not the homologation one. The NA was the race one, the homologation one. It was a crazy, crazy car, and they won a bunch of things. Do you have a winning record?
I mean, their first year, I think, they got sixth at the 12 Hours of Sebring. And that was a class victory. So they got six overall in class victory in the first year, which is really impressive.
That's pretty good for out of the box.
Yeah. They got a podium finish at 24 Hours of Le Mans, which is...
That's pretty good.
I mean, that's really good. Yeah. I mean, this is a pretty long post on Wikipedia. Yeah.
There isn't
so.
Just a chart somewhere? No chart? No.
Well, it's not a huge... I don't think the following is big enough to like come in here and edit and make a good one. So if someone's listening and wants to do that...
Someone go in there and edit up a chart for us. I think it was successful, though. I think it was considered a successful race car.
Yeah, 2006, 24 Hours of Le Mans, they got 11th.
I'll tell you what, overall. The guy who worked at the FIA... and allowed the S7 to race, homologated it. That person is now the chief of motorsport at Celine.
Wow.
Yeah, his name is Gabriel, and he's a Frenchman, and he was very interesting and very cool. And he works is the chief racing person on this S1 program.
They in 2006 they won the FFSA GT Championship. A team running an F7 won that. Yeah, super solid car.
Good race car.
Good race car.
Yeah, not such a good street car, but I hope with the S. I mean, the S1, they say 100 grand. They say 450 horsepower, 3,000 pounds, carbon body, for 100 grand. Okay.
Wow.
I'm not saying that they can do it. I'm not saying I'm giving them 5 grand for a deposit, but like the race car could have been garbage, and it was not garbage. The race car was excellent. It was very fun. So the video's fun.
So they understand dynamics clearly, and that now it's, yeah, of course, the next challenge is, you know, with an OEM or sorry, a street car is build quality, reliability, do things shake apart, all that stuff. And
yeah,
so we'll see. How
I mean,
it goes.
Building interiors is really hard.
Very.
You know, and this car that I was in was a race car with a roll cage and naked carbon fender. You know, you close the door and it rattled like throwing a bucket of bolts down the stairs because that's what race cars do.
Yes.
You know, that's normal in the world of race cars. That would, you know, you, so it's, it will be interesting to see what it takes to turn this into a street car. And I know they definitely did have some reliability issues with the races, you know, this year. It was fun as shit to drive, though. I had a good time. I wish I had more time. I would love to get a few more sessions in that thing. It was very approachable. I mean,
well, you drove. When did you drive that GT4 Cup? It was like 2 years ago at
Cayman.
Streets
of Willow. Yeah. Well, that's that. The Cayman GT4 Club Sport, which is the race car, is even easier to drive than the street car because it's BDK and. It's basically just the regular car, except with slicks and different brakes, and you're harnessed in so you can really fingertip drive it.
But there's no more power. There's nothing.
No, like, it's the same. Okay, it's all the same shit. In fact, the one I drove had dual zone air conditioning.
Why?
They all do now. Well, because they pulled them off just regular cars off the assembly line to build them. So and they just, some of them randomly did and some of them didn't.
It's like, here's your riding mechanic. He wants a different temperature, you know.
It was, you know, it was CJ's car, CJ Wilson, and I drove the street car and the race car on the same day. And his street car had radio and AC delete as the option. And then the fucking race car had dual zone AC. It was hilarious.
So weird.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the Cayman GT4, it feels just like a racy version of the regular one. This one, I don't have a basis of comparison.
Of course.
It felt like a race car, but it was really just as solid and, well, that's not true. I was going to say as that Hyundai RM19 thing, but that's not true because the Hyundai had a pretty finished interior, just a Veloster interior, but it was a finished working interior. This didn't.
But race cars, if no one's ever driven one, even like the little time I've spent in like bespoke track cars, they make a lot of noise. Like there are, you know, there's like the netting next to you that rattles around just slightly because it's not going to fit perfectly, and like the belts might jiggle a little bit and wires and other things, and like you take out all the sound deadening in a car, even in like a Miata.
The gravel, you know,
gravel sticking.
Up
is, yeah, every little thing goes. So you hear a lot of stuff. So it's hard to judge like what the street car will be.
Yeah.
Normally we drive the street car first, then the race car version, and this is flipped around.
Yeah. So we have no idea.
Yeah.
It might be great. It might not be. But the dude, Eric Curran, who's doing their development driving, he also drives prototypes for Cadillac.
Whoa.
He has many trophies. E-R-I-C-C-U-R-R-A-N. Eric Curran is his name. And he races. He's a very handsome chap. Races Cadillac prototype race cars, I believe.
Yep.
He had a nice ATS-V long-termer. I believe they won something major.
I mean, Cadillac has done really well in GT racing, I think. I'm not really great at my racing series, but
I forget what he won, but he won some shit.
Insane.
He won some shit. And the guy can drive. And he was and he's doing all their dynamics development and feedback.
Jeez.
So
okay.
It's good.
Yeah,
it's good.
That's a good person to pull.
I was impressed, honestly. I thought like it was pretty understated. I mean, they didn't make a whole lot of grandiose claims. It was, here's this car, we're developing it by using this race series, and we've made the race series affordable. And I mean, I think they were trying to tiptoe around the relationship with Ford for the engines. I don't really know exactly what comes from where at this point. But okay, it's, you know, they're, it looks like a fun little car. It's cool. It doesn't seem like they're doing anything that's like sketchy. It seems cool.
Cool.
Yeah.
When's the road car out? Due out?
I don't know. They didn't really say. They said like 2 years maybe. I don't know. They did say that doing this car was much more of a challenge than doing the S7, because the S7 was at a price point where you could pretty much have a Coachworks, you know, you could spend a lot of money to have a Coachworks just make a nice leather version of the race car interior, and that would pretty much work. Well, laws and shit doesn't work that way anymore, and so now you have to do airbags and you have to do different stuff like that, and so it seems hard. Frankly, it seems really hard.
Building a car.
Yeah, it seems really hard.
I feel like that's something that I've learned or come to appreciate more in like the last 10 years. You know, I think when we all get like are new in this game, we complain like, how come this strap seems so cheap compared to this piece of interior? Or right. How come this, that, and the other? And it's like, because every little part in here, which there are like tens of thousands of in a car, has to cost its own amount of money, be sourced from a supplier, and da 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 da. Like, yeah. It's really challenging. It's really complicated. I agree. It's like when we're 23, we're like, how come Pagani can make it like this, but Fiat can't? It's right. Like, you just answered your own question.
Yeah, but, like, it's you know, it's cost. Saline wants this car to be $100,000. I think the S7 was like $450,000 new in 2003, whatever it was.
Well, think about a fully specced out Cayman now is like nearing 100. Yeah, you know?
Yeah. The GTS I drove was $98,000.
And so many of the parts in that car, the cost is, and the R&D is like spread out over multiple models for Porsche, which are gigantic. So now you're asking a small company to do something, you know, similar.
Yeah.
So you do have to kind of give them a little bit of leeway.
We do. It's the Lotus Evora GT is where we give them leeway.
Right.
If they built an alternative to that, that'd be cool. Like, because that's a place where there's a surprisingly small number of players.
Mid-engine 100 grand?
The mid-engine 100 grand. Yeah, you want to go mid-engine, typically you've got to step it up beyond that, outside of the Cayman Boxster and the Evora.
Yeah. There's not a lot. Corvette now, oddly.
It's true. Corvette is in the game.
Yeah.
And I think Saline will have an interesting time, you know, competing against Corvette. But I think that you and I both found that when we drove Corvette back to back with the Evora at Road and Track Performance Car of the Year, that those are cars for a different buyer.
Yeah.
That it's, if you actually spend 10 minutes or 15 minutes driving each of those cars, what each of those cars delivers, you probably would not have a hard time deciding which one of them you wanted.
Absolutely. Yeah. Different size, different weight.
Yeah.
The Corvette's more comfortable, but, you know, because it has to be, and there's so many other, like, considerations for that market versus the Evora.
It's a little quieter about its business, but a little more engaging and fun and lively.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Definitely more racy.
Which?
The Evora, I think, is more racy than the Corvette.
Yeah. I mean, just when you sit in it.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, the whole thing aims at, like, I don't know, if you have the love of traditional driving, like manual transmission, steering is power, but like it's super linear.
It's powered, but the power really dies off once you go past like parking lot speeds.
Yeah, I mean, you can hear the supercharger whistle behind you. Like it connected all those little bits like I like about driving in that kind of canyon manner or tight track manner.
Yeah,
and the Corvette's like you could drive it 2,000 miles. And then if you want to drive it, it felt like it would be at home on like a Daytona road course versus the Evora might be more of like a Streets of Willow tighter track.
Actually,
situation.
I agree. I totally agree. There's a little more room to run.
Yeah. And it's wider and maybe longer than the Evora. I'm not sure.
It's a little bigger.
But yeah, it just feels bigger.
It is bigger, I think, for sure. The behind you. There's more space behind you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the S1 was cool. Also did SVJ Roadster, which pretty much, I mean, I hate to say it's what you'd expect, but I mean, it's a 770 horsepower top down Aventador with, you know, it shoots fire and shit.
The launch control was aggressive. Like, you know, I don't usually pull clips to put on my Instagram from like your video, but I was like, it's a four-wheel burnout and it'll drive traffic and stuff, but it was just It was rad.
It does do that, yeah. And actually, if you turn traction control all the way off and you flat foot the 1-2 shift, it will spin all four wheels at speed as well.
Whoa.
The 1-2 shift.
It just slams the clutches and it's just like, go.
Yeah.
So cool.
They have really dragged this gearbox out as long as they possibly can. It's amazing because, like, you know, when you bang the shifts at full throttle in Corsa mode, all right, it feels kind of like race car-y, I guess, or angry or fucking violent. But like when it does that, like all the time, or even worse, if you turn off the violence, put in street mode and turn off the violence and you're not, but it's not smoother. It's just less violent. It's like, it feels like a person taking a real long time to move a stick shift. Like it's kind of like you have to be like, the McLaren 720 doesn't exist. The McLaren 720 doesn't exist. The McLaren, you know what I mean?
Well, would you say that these are aimed at different markets? I mean, there's definitely overlap because it's, you know, roof down supercar.
Yeah.
But it is like, this is the extroverts super hypercar.
1,000%.
And the McLaren is the engineers. Even though it is
you
still like a boastful vehicle.
Like this want is, people staring at you to have this. Because it's so silly.
Like, how many Huracans do you see in Los Angeles that are black or silver?
They're always pretty loud
colors. They're like blues and greens and other things because I think the people that buy them want to be noticed, and that's why you're drawn to that car.
Yeah, Lambo embraces Skittles colors.
Yeah.
For sure. And SVJ should be Skittles colors too, I think. But it's just so, it's so funny, like, because I like it. I love this car. I thought it was fucking hysterical. But it's so funny, like, I will put up with anything. Like, I'll put up with the clunkiest USB. And have you ever used Apple CarPlay without a touchscreen? You want to talk about
how does that?
You have to use the scroll knob to go through the things.
No, you don't.
Yeah, you do.
What?
This has it. $650,000. You plug in. They added a USB port, finally. It's by the passenger footwell. So you plug in the USB port, and CarPlay, it has CarPlay, but it's not a touchscreen. So you have to scroll and click.
So they've taken the menus of smartphones, but then attached it to the usability of like a remote control TV.
Yeah.
That's really weird.
It's really strange.
What?
But I'll forgive all that shit because the sound, I mean, it just makes the craziest sounds. You know, the engine is so nuts. You know, 8,500 horsepower. I'm sorry, 8,500 RPM. Fuck it. Do you have sound on this? Listen to this. This is a launch control off of Zach's Instagram. Is that muted?
No. Oh, wait.
What has happened here? You have fucked it up?
I did.
You fucked it up? It's got sort of like a, because it's, you know, it's got like a proper two-step in it almost. No?
I don't know. Keep talking. I'm
it's
not
gone
sure
badly.
What's going on.
And also, like, it's, it rot. Here's what's crazy about it. Even the raciest, you know, Nürburgring special Aventador rides better. But listen to the jerkiness of what I want to. You can hear it, how slow the shifts are, and that's in full, like, full kill mode. So, but nevertheless, despite that, I think the Aventador, there's room in the world for it. And, you know, the SVJ, because it's got rear steer, because it's got the active aero, because it's got these extra technologies, it actually is pretty fun to drive also. I know it's weird to consider the fact that one of these might not be fun to drive, but you have to believe me that early Aventadors were not that fun to drive.
Well,
they handled
it
like shit.
Yeah. 5 years ago, we had one 4 years ago, and just any thought of throttle in the corner, it just lifted the front and understeered like a front wheel drive car.
It was crazy.
It was really, really weird.
Yeah. And so you know, the SVJ Roadster, by the way, is 4,000 pounds. 6 minutes 45 around the Nürburgring, it's 4,000 pounds.
What is a 720 weigh?
3,200.
Where? I guess, well, all-wheel drive.
All-wheel drive. It's a giant V12. I mean, the engine is a giant V12. And the gearbox is very heavy, too. The gearbox is much heavier than...
Because it's older.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so that car, believe it or not, you don't really think about this, but the Aventador is a carbon tub. Aventador is a carbon cell car.
Yeah,
and
but
even
is
with
heavy.
That,
yeah.
Even with that, it's still 4,000 pounds.
Well, because the engine is
all-wheel
old,
drive,
all-wheel
rear
drive.
Wheel steer,
that's a very
single clutch gearbox. You know, it's there's a lot of heaviness there.
I wonder how much that gearbox has evolved over the years. Like, you know, you can only take so much material out or change material, but I'm sure it was aluminum from the get go. Like, that's like a fixed weight.
The gearbox?
Yeah, like
I think it's a version. It's an evolution of the Mercy. The Mercy gearbox.
I believe it is, but I'm saying I don't think you can take a ton of weight out of a gearbox unless you completely redesign
and
change it.
I agree. Yeah.
That's why it's 4,000 pounds.
It's a heavy car, but like it's a great example of how technology can mask that stuff because when it's applied right. I mean, because the rear wheel steer and these technologies, if you drove it and I didn't tell you, you'd probably say it was 3,400 or 3,500. Because it gets around those corners. Although, in the real hairpins, I didn't notice it when I first drove SVJ on the racetrack. Because on the racetrack where I drove it, which was Estoril in Portugal, there a second gear bend, which on a racetrack is still like 60, 70 miles an hour, right?
Especially in this car.
That was the tightest corner. But I drove it on some like hairpins. Like you can see in my Instagram, I put up a video of me like mobbing it from like point of view. Go scroll down a little bit. There, dash cam, left side. So this one, you can put sound on if you want, if you've got it still. You can see some hairpins. And so when you go through the hairpins, it's really got that accentuated rear wheel steer thing where it feels like you're almost about to drift.
Okay.
You know what I mean? You don't counter steer. You don't do anything about it. But it feels like your ass is being kind of like... you know, dragged around by the front.
Feels like a fire truck.
A little bit, yeah. So on some of these, on this section right here, I'm kind of mobbing a little bit. This was the failed attempt at adjust the noise video. I tried to make adjust the noise video, and I had a full audio recorder fail. And so there isn't adjust the noise video, which is unfortunate for a car like this. But Janina at Lamborghini, who is my new best friend, said that I may take an SVJ in locally and make adjust the noise video because we wouldn't want to not have that.
I agree.
And so we will have that. There's just a delay of game on it.
I mean, it's one of the better assets of this car is the noise.
Yeah, it's pretty much what you're spending your money on. Well, as you could see in that video, the pops are good. They're real pops. It's not just the burble tune. This thing shoots serious fire. We followed someone up a hill who was mobbing, and it does shoot fire on the overruns. It's very, very good.
I wonder what it's like to actually drift a car that has the electric rear steer because it already feels... Like, I wonder how you can tell when it's transitioning from it feels like the ass is moving out on you to the ass is moving
out
on you. I've never done it.
Yeah, I have no idea. You get with SVJ, it has 3 degrees of counter steer from the rear wheels, though.
Okay.
Which is a lot.
Is it? How does that compare to, I don't know, Porsche? Or like, what is the last one I drove?
I think the Porsche is like 2.5. But the Porsche has a shorter wheelbase. It's also not, you know what I mean? It's a smaller car. So I think it's the same. I believe it's ZF makes all of the rear steer systems.
Really?
For everybody, yeah.
Oh.
I believe
they're
they
smart.
Do.
That company is so smart.
It doesn't bum me out that SVJ has rear steer. It makes the car better. It kind of bums me out that manufacturers are going to figure out that if they just apply rear steer, that it will get them out of having to make the car lighter.
Sorry, that bothers you?
Yes, because it'll be a cheat. Because like with RS6, like the RS6 weighs 4,600 pounds. And it can dance a bit because it's got rear steer. But if it didn't, you know, it would just be noticeably fatter. But rather than making the cars lighter, they're just going to apply this.
I wonder when they're going to hit that wall where, you know, MPG can't go up any quicker. It almost feels like a race between, well, we have to make the cars lighter because we need better MPG, or will everything transition to electric and then weight won't matter? Like they can get away with saying weight doesn't matter. because no one's measuring the fuel consumption anymore.
Yeah.
Because like if we knew that we were going to be on 100 years, if like electricity wasn't a possible option right now, they would have to start thinking about making cars lighter, and you couldn't make a 4,000 pound car.
Be hiring Mazda to consult. how do we get some fuel efficiency out of these NA gas?
Bring your window
to...
drill and please come help us and you know, carbon tub it. But they don't have to if everything transitions to electric, especially with the high end luxury stuff.
You know, the thing about the transitioning to electric, I just had this conversation with somebody. I think the transition to electric is being treated as an inevitability. And I don't necessarily think that that is based on fact. Like a full transition to electricity would require building a whole new power grid. It really would. And like, I just don't think that anyone is prepared for that. And until we get to a place where everybody is on board and prepared for that kind of thing, it's just not going to happen.
I think it's just going to take longer than we think. And you know, these days we get like we get a new device, new TV technology comes out. Like, we watch the evolution of technology move from one step to the other really quickly.
But not when it requires such a major infrastructure change.
That's what I'm saying. Is I think people think because we've watched phones transition, you know, quote, quickly. I mean, in the last, let's see, when I was in high school, I had like an emergency cell phone.
Right.
And that was 18 years ago. So 18 years, we went from this is a flip phone that barely does anything to a phone that does everything and you can touch it.
But you didn't have to dig up.
I agree.
The entire city worth of roads to make those happen.
Right. So I think we have gotten conditioned to see technology change quickly in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
So when people look at this thing, they go, oh, this should happen quick, right? Because it's just another piece of tech. And it's like, but there's actually a lot more that'll have to go into a complete change.
And I think, like, it's not an anti-EV stance by any means. Like, I like EVs, but I just think that it would be very foolish for a manufacturer to treat the transition to EVs as an inevitability and therefore a way out of maximizing the efficiency of their gas product. You know what
I
mean?
Well, I think Volvo said they're going to only be selling EVs after, what, like 2025?
I think the term they used was electrified, which implied hybrid and EV only.
Okay.
And I think someone else implied that as well. And it was a tricky turn of phrase in order to get out of the commitment to full EV-dom. Ultimately, EV sales, which are improving, are still a very, very small percentage of the cars that get sold every year. Like, really, really small.
Volvo said they want half their cars to be fully electric by 2025, but that's so half. So
I don't know.
You know,
I mean, look, it's so, how easy is it for Volvo to say that shit in 2019?
True.
You know what I mean?
You can change it back.
That's the problem I have with a lot of the people who set these some standard that sounds crazy for 10 years in the past. Like, you walk that shit back in 3 years, and nobody even... The way our news cycle fucking works, they don't have to walk it back. Some intern has changed a website.
That's true.
you know what I mean? Like, no one's going to walk that shit back later.
Well, there'll be a post about the Wayback Machine saying that it said 20 years.
I mean, but listen, if Elon isn't being held account for any of the bullshit about a car's going to drive across the country by itself in 2018 or a million robo-tax in 2020, if none of that matters... Certainly Volvo's little fucking prediction here doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Either things matter or they don't.
And I think also it would be fortunate and fair if Volvo, you know, 2024 go, look, the infrastructure in most of the countries isn't ready for fully electric, so we're not going to continue to do that.
Yeah.
If the cars can't be supported and, you know, charged, et cetera, et cetera. So
I mean, they're trying. Like here in L.A., if you build a new home, that home has to be solar ready. And that doesn't mean you have to put panels on, but it does mean you have to build a roof that can hold the weight of panels. It does mean you have to install conduit so that you could easily wire those panels. Conduit is the tube that wiring goes through. You have to, and so any new building in LA has to be solar ready. Now, solar, I'm not an electrical engineer, and I might fuck this up when I say this. I'm trying to get it right, and I, please don't jump down my throat if I get it wrong. My understanding is that, so for my building, I get 400 amps from the city. Putting solar panels on the roof does not change that at all. 400 amps is sort of like the size of my fuel lines, right? Adding solar panels would increase the size of my fuel tank, but have nothing to do with my fuel lines. Actually, having a solar panel is like sort of having a permanent gas pump going into my fuel tank that's on trickle.
Right.
That's what a solar panel does. But it doesn't change that 400 amps going to my building.
Yeah.
At I've needed to connect one building to the power grid. It's taken me 8 months. And we're talking about to connect what is ultimately like a 1.5-inch wire. Imagine what it would take to do this for the entire city, and then to up the power available to every home, because you're now charging two EVs every night at every home. That's a lot of power usage.
It is.
It's a lot.
It is.
So just, it needs, you know, there just needs to be the appropriate infrastructure for that. And also, you know, I think a lot of people dwell on the range of EVs, which is important. Does it get 200 miles or 300 miles, whatever? You know, the Taycan, just they came out and it said 201.
which is the EPA rated, because we saw a much bigger range when we were filming that car.
In my opinion, it will be very easy to beat that. That's just in my opinion of when of having driven one for a bit. I think you could blast through a charge like nothing if you're mobbing like any car. Like, remember I went through a CTSV tank of fuel in 64 miles?
Yeah.
Or you can, I think you could probably get in the high 200s if you are up, if you're optimized.
Well, when we were filming the B-roll for that car, and we drove it from downtown LA up to the canyons, did canyon runs because we were filming out, go back, reset, go back, yeah, reset. And when we started the day, all the charges were full and the range was showing like 235. And we went, oh, this is going to be close because we're going kind of far. We're doing a lot of stuff. And when we came down, we still had 100 left.
Yeah.
And we had driven 120 miles, but we had done it going uphill,
yeah,
at speed, et cetera, et cetera. So we should have used more than the mileage we covered.
Yeah.
And it was still fine.
I think, look, I know the EPA test is a impartial test, but it is my opinion that there's nothing, no such thing as a free lunch, right? So if you're going to make your car faster, perform better, and able to do these things repeatedly over and over, there's a give and take, right? And so maybe the give and take is, okay, it does this thing better, but that means it performs worse on this test. Okay. I think that's a fair trade-off, and it is what it is, right? But I do believe, based on the drive that I had, and based on what you and JF and people who spent a lot more time around the Taycan than I have said, that a conscious human can 100% beat that EPA number every single time,
mm-hmm,
which I think is probably true.
Yeah. It'll take a long time to set all the cities up for that. It'll be,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
what,
yeah,
I think about.
Oh, I forgot. It was the range wasn't as important, because there's cars that have bigger fuel tanks and smaller fuel tanks. If you've got the infrastructure and the charge speeds down, if you can recharge in 10 or 15
right,
minutes, and there's a bunch of places to do it, range becomes less of a big deal.
One of the guys that was on Sam Smith's Thunderhill 25-hour team, I went up there and watched him race with some other people.
That sounded kind of miserable. Wasn't the weather just like fucked the whole weekend?
It was fucked for like 18 hours, and then it got okay.
Okay.
But for a while, the forecast was like, it was like torrential rain and cold. But one of those guys, he lives in Minnesota, and he bought a Mitsubishi Miev.
Oh, the IMEV.
IMEV.
Doesn't Aaron Robinson have one of those too?
Maybe.
This dude loves it.
He bought it super used. I think it was like 10 or 12 grand. I mean, when they came out, the MSRP was ridiculous. It was like near 30. And
we
got to
ask
on,
Aaron
dude.
Robinson. I think he paid like $8,500 for his brand new.
That's what you want to do, because it's a golf cart.
Yeah.
But this dude drives it in Minnesota in the winter when it's super cold. It has a remote start to like start heating the battery up and everything. You can turn the heater on in the car.
Yeah.
They put snow tires on it, and it's the little runabout. So kind of to your point, yeah, he knows he can't drive it 130 miles. He would never want to do that. But for driving around the city and parking easily, not having to warm the gas up and you know, kind of the damage that comes with driving a car for brief periods in cold weather, he's like, it's perfect.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, if you have a, if you have the charging infrastructure, you don't need that 200 mile range.
I agree. If we had more, you know, opportunities to charge, like if there were like gas stations. I mean, honestly, if they were as convenient as gas stations, or half as convenient as gas stations, even a third as convenient as gas stations, I think that once you're over a certain amount, 200 is a pretty good number.
But they can be, because, you know, electricity is literally everywhere. Like every building has, not every building can have a gas tank stored in the basement because of, you know, safety regulation. But that's why we're starting to see charging stations next to like meters. You know, there's only a few of them, but it's like, all right, that's a dip. That's a toe in the pond.
And the other question is, can the public, and I mean Americans, take care of public shit? Because if past precedent is anything to go by, the answer is definitely no. Americans cannot take care of shared things. If it's not our possession or it's not locked the fuck up, we're just destroying it. So true. I think those things, those chargers mounted on light poles and chargers mounted on parking meters, like, I think that's a great idea. And like, if we have enough power going down the city, if the mains can handle it, like, let's do all of that. That sounds great. But I've also seen a bunch of people cutting them. Now, is that a reason not to do it? Definitely not. Like, but it's a concern that like we've seen with the scooters.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
when we walk to a lot of places in Venice, I walk over the canals, like the Venice canals. And like every time I walk over the canals, there's at least one bird scooter in the canals. Like, and is that funny? Kind of. You know, do I think bird scooters are kind of litter? Yeah. But like, Americans just can't take care of public shit. It's why there'll never be fucking robo taxis. You don't want your car to be a taxi. You want someone else's car to be a taxi, not
very
your
true.
Fucking car.
Yeah, very, very true.
Get out of here. Robo taxis. The fuck out of here, dude.
That's a very long way away.
Bro.
Very, very, very.
You know, I mean, what's the story? The day the second car came off the assembly line was the first race, right? The day Elon switches on his robo taxis, 1,000 people are jacking off in the back of empty cars.
Well, it's like that.
Everybody's jerking off in robo taxis.
Well, someone
people.
Made that porn with the self-driving Tesla, and so now they'll do it in your taxi.
Yeah.
I think you have to get all the way to the point of like Fifth Element, where if you get in the car and do anything that is other than sitting in it, it immediately like debits your credit account.
Yeah.
And it just takes it right then. So if you puke, it's like, great, you just gave us $200. You don't have a say in it.
Yeah.
You would have to have that kind of net.
Do you want to live in that surveillance state? Fucking
no, we'll be dead.
Lilu Dallas,
that,
multi-pass. I don't want to live in that fucking
it's
state.
It's totally going to go there.
I would
there.
Like to be dead by then.
We will be.
Thank you.
Barely.
And until then, a 1987 911 with a key, please.
It's true. Yeah.
I don't want
apocalypse
my shit.
Truck.
I don't want my shit fucking knowing to. That story I just read about all the data that is left behind in your car when your phone connects to your car. Fuck.
I didn't read that.
It's basically like if your phone connects to your Bluetooth in your car, you need to figure out how to manually wipe all that shit before you sell that car.
Oh,
because
gotcha.
There are not difficult ways to extract that data, and that the person you sold that car to, or the dealer you sold that car to, or who the fuck ever, can learn all kind of things about you.
That is like a future hacking kind of thing.
Yeah.
People could like buy a used car and then
they don't
see.
Even buy the used cars. They're buying the people are having the stereo. The system's taken out.
They're just buying the stereo.
They're just buying the stereo
and then harvesting
hard drives.
It for data.
Yep.
Fuck.
Yep. Don't even have to buy the car, bro. Shit's crazy.
Wow.
Yep.
Hackers buy press cars. Why did I just say that? Why I'm going to edit that out.
Yeah. Right.
Why did I give him that advice? I'm literally writing
definitely
out to edit it
buy
later.
Press cars for that. No, the good news is most press cars are probably too expensive at this point to make it worthwhile. But yeah, dude, that shit is crazy.
That's very scary,
right?
I think we just made a law that they can't make us use facial recognition without our consent at like airports, which is good. I think that's probably good. I want to say it was like Frontier Air or something. They were trying it out and like, oh, instead of your ticket, you can just use facial recognition. Everyone went, huh? I didn't say yes to that.
I know. I have that clear thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I sort of wish I didn't.
I turned it down because it was like, scan your retina. I was like, no.
It was too late by the time I realized what I had done. No, seriously, I realized how stupid that sounds. But like, by the time I realized, like, oh wow, like I definitely just gave a private company my fingerprints in order for some little extra convenience. And it would be one thing if that convenience, well, it sounds just as dumb, but if that convenience really made a difference. But to be perfectly honest, I've flown probably 50 segments this year. I think it saved me maybe 15 minutes cumulatively.
Really?
Yeah, clear
over pre-check, you mean?
Over pre-check.
Yeah.
Clear doesn't save me. Because, like, it's one thing to get extra screened for the government and do pre-check and not have to take your shoes off and shit, but Clear is literally a private company that you have now given, you paid them to take your fingerprints, and you go, oh, fuck, I definitely did that, didn't I? Shit, you can't get them back. They got them forever now. Now it's like, fuck, now you're in the system.
Well, I did the 23andMe, which I read their entire terms and conditions before I did it.
Did you regret that? Yeah.
I didn't regret it because, as I've said, like, I'm adopted. I need to make sure the girl I'm dating is not distantly related
to
me.
That's true.
Which is a real thing.
Your convenience value outweighs.
Yeah. No. My interest in not accidentally having incest outweighs my convenience and not wanting to be cloned. But
that's true. Even though the odds are really that low.
The odds are low. But, you know, Sarah and I are pretty similar. In a lot of ways. So we had to check. I had to check. It's for me.
That's very funny.
I dated a girl once. My mom's like, you guys kind of look alike. I said, you know why you shouldn't say that.
Yeah.
But they sent out a new thing that was like, oh, you will get rid of all your data on 23andMe if you ask us, except for these 10 different times. And one is like safety. One is, you know, a criminal case. But one of them at the bottom was like, if it's you being used to for scientific study. I was like, well, that's pretty broad. That's really broad.
Define scientific study.
Oh, they did not. They just wrote that. So who knows?
Boy.
They could be like, well, we're studying what it's like to clone Zach and sell him on the black market.
We're trying to see if we can get adopted people to fuck their siblings.
Oh, God. That'll be on Pornhub soon, which is a big mess.
Nah, it's already there. It's already
so
there.
So terrible.
So anyway, those are the thoughts. Is there anything else? Oh, so the Aston. So get this, the Aston Martin, which is a lovely car. This car has, it's a 2003. It has 13,700 miles on it as of today. And I haven't driven it more than like an hour at a time in probably a decade. And so I drove it to Palm Springs for the SVJ launch. So a couple interesting things happened. One, I learned that, well, it took me 4.5 hours to get to Palm Springs, 120 miles, 4.5 hours.
Is this Thanksgiving?
It was, no.
That's usually
it
what
was it, just a fucking Tuesday.
At like 5?
I left at 1:30 p.m. and I got there at 5:40. It was fucked. So it has like an inch too little leg room. Like, if I drive it barefoot, which I kind of have to do anyway because the pedal box is too small, three pedals, I try to drive it with driving shoes on. That's where I started. I go, I normally have to do this barefoot, but this is going to be a long drive, and so like maybe I'll just do driving shoes. Can't do it.
Wow.
The driving shoes, the thing about barefoot that you can't do with driving shoes, I can tuck my feet behind the pedals with barefoot, and I guess stretch my knees out. With driving shoes, I can't. And it's like an inch too little. This is specific to me, I know, but my knees really, really hurt by the time I got there, which sucked, actually. On the way home, which was only 2.5 hours, I did do barefoot, and it was way better. So then I'm driving there, and I'm going, once I finally got out of traffic, like, finally, I hit the edge of Los Angeles. Palm Springs, if you don't know, is east of Los Angeles. If you live at the beach, where I live, to get to Palm Springs, which is in the desert, you literally have to just turn right and drive directly across all of Los Angeles County. The whole thing. The long way. And it's one of the worst drives you could do on the West Coast. And it's just fucking miserable. But anyway, I finally hit the desert, got to the edge of the city. Now it's night. It's really cold. And I didn't think about this until later, but I haven't driven this car in under 60 degrees in probably it's the same, probably 10 years. So I only took it out on nice days in the summer when I would go visit Connecticut. So it hasn't seemed cold in a really long time. So I'm driving east, you know, on the 10, and I'm going fast, like triple digits fast. It's dark. There's not a lot of people by the time I get out there. And I'm in sixth gear, which this is a Viper gear ratios. So sixth gear in this thing, you're turning, even at triple digits, you're turning like not even 3,000 RPM. Right. And now fifth is a different story, but sixth is the fuel economy gear. So it's a big V12 engine, not working very hard. It's really cold outside, like in the 30s. And I'm driving into like a 60 mile an hour headwind.
Oh, man. That's Palm Springs.
So, right. So, you know, that drive, right? Mm-hmm. So it's blasting me. Right. But and the car is fine. But the temperature needle goes from the middle slowly down to a quarter. And then down to an eighth, the temperature. And I go, wow, this must be, you know, I'm going like, I'm probably into like 150, 160 mile an hour wind. It's really cold. And I'm like, wow, this thing is really like working overtime. And I thought it was a kind of a fluke, right? When I got back off the highway, it came back to normal and all right, whatever. Well, then there's the picture of it. People on the comments were freaking out that my thermostat was bad. For me, I suffer from oversensitivity to the cars. I've definitely had shit checked out when nothing was wrong. Like, and I've wasted time. So for me, one weird thing is a fluke. Two is a phone call. Three is a flatbed. That's how I work, right? So it went down to there and then it came back up, parked at the hotel, fine. Drove it around in Palm Springs, fine, right? On the highway home, it's still cold, but it's not windy, and it dips down a little bit below half. And I go, oh, that's interesting. Maybe it is a little sticky, whatever. And then 2 days later, it happened a third time. Now I go, okay, now something's off. I called Amber at GI, and I go, first I called Bozy, and I go, hey, 2003 Aston Vanquish thermostat. What's the affordable equivalent? And Bozy says, so the thermostat is $240 for an Aston, $110 for a 2005 Ford GT, and $90 for a Cummins 3500 for a Dodge.
No way.
So I didn't know if the thermostat opened and closed at a different temperature for the diesel. I don't know. Maybe.
Right,
maybe
it might be set different.
I don't know. But I was pretty sure that it was probably going to be the same for the Ford GT as for the Aston. And lo and behold, Amber orders both, and they're the same. We returned the Aston one. And so I dropped a car off. I expected the car to be there for like 2 or 3 days. She literally had this job done in 2 hours and 40 minutes. She called me, she's like, car's done. I'm like, I can't even come get it. Like, can it just stay there? It's got to stay there. Like, I can't come get it. And she was like, all right, whatever. But she was done in hours. So shout out to Amber at GI for fucking making that happen with the quickness. But yeah, so the thermostat was getting a little sticky, replaced with a Ford equivalent part.
So it was just stuck open and it was just yeah, trying to cool it constantly.
I'm guessing it was stuck in open loop, and when you drive it in hot weather or when you drive it around the city, it would just be an open loop anyway. And there's probably not a lot of conditions where it should be closing. Because it's such a big fucking engine and a small mouth, you know, it's probably running in open loop most of the time.
Right, and doing stop and go all the time, et cetera, et cetera.
So, fortunately, simple problem, simple fix. And it's unfortunate because I wanted to take that car on adventure drives this year.
Yeah.
It's not going to work. It's just not going to work.
Yeah, because those driving days are way longer than 2 hours.
It's just not going to be comfortable enough, which for a GT car is so unfortunate.
I mean, that's literally their job.
I know, but and it's fine for cruising around LA and going to car shows and whatnot, and like I'm not going to get rid of the car, but I just don't think that that's the road tripping solution that I'm looking for, unfortunately.
Does the seat not go back far enough?
It's literally touch. So it's touching. It's actually touching the back seat. So
right.
My other solution, depending on, not now, eventually, maybe.
Well, how do you fit any 46M3s? We do a little wife swap.
So the seats, if you look at the seats in this car, they're actually the same Recaros you would get in the Audi S4 and RS4 B5.
Okay.
B6. It's a nice seat. There's nothing wrong with the seat itself. It's actually, the seat ended up in a bunch of other different cars. It has a slightly different top. The headrest on the top is got. It's like shorter, but it's the same seat, and it's fine. But it's literally touching the back seat. So my possible solution, maybe temporary solution, if I really am going to keep this car for a long time, would be, you know where I'm going with this, take those seats out and find
a thinner seat.
Yeah, find an aftermarket bucket seat that I could have trimmed in the appropriate Ralph Lauren leather. Now, we're now talking something that's a very expensive solution. You know, because you want to find a bucket seat that doesn't look too much like a racing seat, but that still looks appropriate for the period.
Kind of like the seats in your Porsche, honestly.
Those are too old, maybe. Too old? But yeah, those are too old. But I don't know. There might be a seat. Here's the part where I get 1,000 Instagram messages with seat suggestions. Please don't. I'll find it if I care enough. But, you know, with a slimmer seat, I could create the extra 2 inches of leg room that would make a difference.
Yeah.
Do I care? I'm not sure.
Buying that seat just so you can do one road trip wouldn't make any sense. Like, it would just be, it'd be the long term solution, and then you keep the stock seats wrapped up somewhere in storage.
Yeah, you keep the stock seats in plastic, and it would be the I'm doing this for the next 20 years solution.
I think you're just aware of that solution, but if you're not driving it more than an hour around town and taking like short trips, then you don't. There's no reason for you to do that.
No, I'm not. Yeah. I'm not. So anyway, that's.
So you're gonna get a presser for.
Yeah, we got to figure out what to do for. It depends. Are you gonna come on adventure drives? Because if you come, then, or if like other people come, I think I'd rather get like a bit like a Range Rover or something where like four of us could just go together. Cause like I don't need to drive a fucking sports car on this shit. That adventure drives, by the way, we're talking about Rob Ferretti's adventure drives. I think it's AD07, is the Pacific Northwest. Bless you.
Thank you.
Pacific Northwest this year. He hasn't published the route, so I don't want to say the route, but I know the route, and it is the if you think Pacific Northwest, think of like the five best places you could go in the Pacific Northwest, US and Canada, and it's pretty much it. And I went with Hannah and Thaddeus on the European one. We had a fucking great time. It was awesome. You could bring a sports car, you could rent a sports car, you could bring a luxury car. It doesn't matter. What I love about adventure drives is it's a road rally for people who hate road rallies. Because, yes, it's about the driving and the roads, but it's also about the stops, and there's no stickers on the cars. There's no, like, checkpoints. It's just like, here's where the hotel is. Here's some cool things to see along the way you might want to check out. You know, it's a little more flexible. I like that. I like that very much. And so I was thinking that if, like, four of us wanted to go, maybe we just get, like, a Range Rover or something. You know, that would be comfortable and spacious and sort of fast.
Like a Range Sport or something
like that. Yeah, because Jamal's over at Range Rover now, so they could send us the fucking biggie one.
Oh, my God.
That's what I'm saying.
What does that get on the highway, like 12 miles per gallon?
Who fucking cares?
That would be a real fun car because the roads would be very smooth.
Yeah, and it's all about fucking looking around. You know, it's not so much about carving canyons on the... At least I don't think it is. I think the roads will be nice, but it's not about attacking canyons as it is like... Holy shit, this is beautiful.
It's great. It's grand touring. Yeah. And you're not going to go 180 miles an hour past the mountain you're driving past. Even if you did, you'd have time to look at the mountain.
Yeah. Yeah. So okay. Anyway,
that sounds pretty good.
Those are the things. I think do we have questions? I'm sure the people want to talk about some stuff. So let's see what you guys want to talk about today. If you guys want to talk about some shit, we can get in there. I'm happy to do you find a window? Oh, you found a separate window for Super Chat?
Well, we've always had a separate chat window, but they don't have one for Super Chat.
They haven't
still
had a separate Super Chat window yet? That's so dumb. YouTube, fucking get on it, man. Damn.
They keep changing shit every
I'm week. Getting, I'm amassing framed pieces for the new spot.
Mm-hmm.
And I just got the Carl one back.
It's good.
It's awesome. And I got so much cool shit we're going to be hanging up there. I put that in like a Mona Lisa frame. It's like, give me the obnoxious gold frame.
That's
Carl.
Good.
Miss you, buddy. What do we got?
All right. What would you guys choose personally? E46M3, 993C2911, or an Evora GT 3 years down the road?
993 Carrera 2. Yeah. A 993 Carrera 2 is, so the Evora is still new. So it will only feel older.
For a while. Right.
The E46 is great, but
it's not magic. It's
not
okay.
Magic.
I like it a lot.
It's
but
great,
it's
but
fine.
It's not magic. The 993 combines the greatness, that sort of mechanical goodness of the air-cooled Porsches with being the final version of a 30-year project, 911, 1968 to 1998, with enough modernness, like working air, good air conditioning and decent radio and stuff like that. Expensive to maintain, but I believe that the driving experience and ownership experience is worthwhile. And if you buy the right one, you're not going to lose much on depreciation.
It's probably the right answer. I don't like that it's the right answer, but it is. I mean, you get like, you know, the like German comfort, ergonomics, and kind of grand touring ability of E46 and 911, but it's a little bit more interesting, kind of like the Evora.
I mean, the problem is in today's market, those three cars, the E46 M3 is $25,000, mm-hmm. the 993 is $55,000 to $60,000, and the Evora
right now is 80,
but yeah. 3 years down in the road was also $60,000. So the 993 is twice the cost of the BMW.
Totally.
And I think, that it's that you're getting more for your money. Is it quote twice as good? I don't know, but I think it's a higher point of entry, but it's a nicer product.
I think it's not twice the value, but I don't know if you're you're looking for investment, you're looking for driving. Like, it's annoying that the 911 is as good as it is.
Yep.
Yeah. Evora would have to fall a lot in price for me to want to buy one to compete with these other two, just because they're not established. Like, I know nowadays you can get an Exige, and you know those prices. You can drive it for like 2 years and then sell it, and it won't move.
It's the same. Yeah.
But you need the Evora to get to that stage, and I don't know if it'll be there in 3 years.
Their Evoras are pretty bottomed out at around 50.
Okay.
Yeah. They're. I mean, you could buy a used one in the low 70s, and if you kept it nice, you'd be all right. Yeah.
All right.
I from this angle, I can't fucking read that. You got to read them.
$50,000, would you buy a V8 Vantage or an S-Class Coupe?
Ooh, V8 Vantage.
Vantage.
Yeah, manual.
Yep.
V8 Vantage manual.
What car
is... $50,000 S-Class Coupe is a really bad place to be.
Because it's really a $90,000
car. Because it's a $90,000 car to maintain, and when you try and sell it in 2 years, you're going to get 20 for
it. Yeah.
That's a bad place to be.
V8 Vantage manual, probably pretty stable.
Yes, yeah. I was looking at a couple of those. There's a couple of those that have gone for very reasonable money on Bring a Trailer recently.
Like 40.
40 to 45, you're getting a spectacular car.
Yeah.
Yeah. For the guy asking about the other one, you said, is there an earthquake going on? Did you feel the vibrations?
Mm-mm.
I feel like vibrations. The 993 C2 versus V8 Vantage manual, I think if you wanted to drive it daily, then yes. If you wanted a weekend car, I might still go 993, but they're cool.
I'd go Vantage just because I like the way they look better. Yeah. And sound, etc. What car is so bad if someone gave it to you on Christmas, you'd have to resell it later without them knowing? I mean, new or used. I guess let's go with new. That's an easier thing to kind of figure out.
Ghibli?
Yeah.
So bad? I mean, what car is so bad? Mitsubishi Eclipse Cross? I mean, that's low-hanging fruit, but
Mitsubishi
that
anything.
Fucking new front-wheel drive BMW thing that's a 2 Series, it looks like a Corolla.
Yeah, that's...
looks real terrible.
It looks so bad. I don't know, what are they doing? They just want the money.
It's gone wrong there, yeah.
They don't make the 500L anymore,
Audi
but that'll
Q3,
be it.
Audi Q3, which was pretty terrible.
I would keep that.
If it was free, I'd probably keep it.
If it was free.
Yeah.
500L, I'd probably sell.
Oh, yeah, 500L, yeah.
I hate that car.
A lot went wrong there.
Thoughts on Tag Heuer? Carrera 01 is a first watch. WAF.
The Tag Heuer Carrera Caliber 01 is not a bad watch, actually. It's kind of an interesting watch. You grab a picture of it. If it's the one I'm thinking of, it has the skeleton dial. It was a little tough to read. Caliber 01, yeah. And It's kind of a it's a skeletonized dial, which means you can see through the dial to some of the mechanical guts going on in the back. It's good if you like a watch where there's kind of a lot going on. You know, some folks are really, they like a real busy watch. They like a Breitling Navitimer or watches that have a lot of shit going on in the dial, and that's a good watch if you like that. It's not really my style, but it is a very well-made watch, and you should use my code TST175 and buy one off of Crown & Caliber. They've got a couple of them. Is that on Crown & Caliber right now?
Yep.
There it is. It's a cool watch. I mean, I like a skeletonized dial. I think it's fun when you can see some guts, and what's good about this one, actually, it has lumed hands, so when it gets dark, you can still tell the time. Some of the skeletonized dials have, like, fancy schmancy hands where they go, we don't need no lume, but I like lume. The strap, different, there's a couple different straps available. I don't love any of them. So I would consider an aftermarket strap maybe, but it's a nice piece.
Sweet. Best leftover holiday food,
bro.
Any of it? Stuffing?
The best shit. Stuffing. There was no leftovers.
Oh, yeah. That's
the
true.
Latkes, dude.
Do those reheat well?
They do.
Because, like, fried things can soften. Like, leftover French fries, no good.
You know, it's
structural
funny,
integrity
you,
down.
Yeah, you asked me about a leftover latke and reheating. Don't know. Never had to do it.
Yeah.
There's never been one left.
Anything cold is easy.
My latkes are fucking next level.
They really are.
Yeah.
When's the next garage video going up?
Oh, when Armin is next available. What I was really waiting for to shoot the next video was the trays on the lifts were about a week behind. And so because we had a huge rain after Thanksgiving, and believe it, like, when it rains here, it fucks shit up. Like, it really, like we have a, like, so in the front of the building, there's dirt where they're going to be putting landscaping, right? And we have this barrier built of sandbags. And if it rains, we have to keep the mud that is created on our property. If that mud goes in the street and someone, the wrong person sees it, we can be fined $25,000 for the mud going in the street. We're responsible for containing that.
Okay.
Now, in order to load those platforms into the building, we have to disassemble the front fence, put boards across the mud, and literally drive a forklift back and forth across the boards from the truck in. So when that was a river of mud and lake of mud, we couldn't open the fences because the mud would have gone into the street and we would have got fined. So we had to kick that to the following week. And so now they've loaded in about half of the trays, and we're going to do another video very soon.
You can do a video where you stand on all the trays, just like a lock-off shot, and you just mask in where you're everywhere, like a weird commercial, like, come to Mass Warehouse!
Like a Jamiroquai video?
Exactly.
it's going to be soon. There's a lot going on. The next video, like, it's going to look so much different. It's going to look so much more, like, finished. Like, I was just over there, and they did... They drywalled in the new studio, and they drywalled in my office, which I hadn't seen before. It looks awesome. I'm so excited.
We got to go over there and plan the thing.
The layout of the table. Yeah.
Yep.
The table is being custom made, our new table. It's a black walnut table that's going to have epoxy lakes and rivers in it. Not a big lake and river, but it's going to have epoxy lakes and rivers. And they're not going to be like Harley Davidson blue. They're going to be a natural looking blue. Blue-green. It's going to be a beautiful fucking table. It's going to be so cool.
Cool.
And you're going to sit at the end of it rather than here. But otherwise, the setup is going to be pretty similar to this. The table's basically the same size as this, except it's a little taller. It's going to be fucking awesome. I'm so ready. They have to put three layers of drywall on to make for the soundproofing.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Jeez.
It's thick. Yeah.
You can shoot a guy in here. No one will know.
Exciting.
Quickly rank them. Twin turbo VA BMW, VAG, McLaren, what?
Oh, who's making the best twin turbo V8 right now? Is it BMW, Volkswagen, Audi, Mercedes, McLaren, or GM? Well, definitely McLaren, by the way.
Yeah.
The 720 engine is the one.
Yep.
If we're ranking all twin-turbo 4-liter V8s, yes, McLaren.
It's the small one that makes all the horsepower.
Yes, it's the one that makes the 800. I think Mercedes is the next most fun.
I agree.
Yeah.
Really responsive, too. Really good engine.
Yeah. Followed by Audi, followed by BMW. I haven't driven the GM one. What's that in? Blackwing?
Cadillac.
Is it in the CT6?
Yeah.
CT6V or something like that? What? I don't know what's got it, actually. I haven't driven a Cadillac.
CT6V.
CT6V? We should try that.
I haven't driven
a Cadillac since ATS-V.
It's a good-looking car.
Yeah. I'm sure that's not going to out-engine the McLaren.
Because it costs way less.
Yeah, that's okay.
That's why.
It's probably nice.
All right. Best value small diver.
Oh, watches?
I guess SKX-13. Whatever that means.
The Seiko. I don't know much about small because my wrists are really big. I just don't spend time looking at small watches. But SKX are really nice Seiko divers. The Prospects line is a little higher quality for not much more money. If you can find a smaller diameter Prospects Seiko, it's a little better piece.
All right,
SKXs are nice, though.
This guy says, do you have any extra insight or comments from the Toyota Chaser you drove in New Zealand? He's going to sell his 07 SS to get a Chaser before the prices go bonkers.
No.
Anything not said in the video, basically.
Oh, my God. When was that? 2013?
Yes.
Fuck. I don't know.
It was really nice. It drove well.
I remember it being a nice car. I remember on the outside it looked like a Camry. On the inside, it had a lot of Lexus parts.
I feel like the outside, the shape of that with the mods he did actually looked a bit like the prettiest 7 Series. Like the late 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah.
I don't know.
There was nothing about it that was kept out of that video. It was a lovely car. It had a lot of Supra-like attributes. I think it drove well.
Yeah,
I mean,
it
was a nice car. It was good. I don't remember anything beyond the video, but it was fun.
It handled well.
Yeah, it was a cool car.
Yeah. AP is being offered a new white dial Daytona for MSRP from someone. And what are your thoughts on legibility?
I can't tell time on a Daytona. The Rolex Daytona, to me, is a stupid watch because everything is cluttered on the dial, and I have a very hard time telling time on it.
That's really funny.
However, if you want to floss on somebody, a white dial Daytona is a very good way to do it. One at Sticker, it's instantly worth more than that. The white dial, I think, is the best, most legible of them. I think the black dial is a lot harder to read than the white dial. Thank you for pulling up the Crown and Caliber link. That's very good, or attempting to.
I don't want to shark their competition.
That's okay. That's all right. That's their blog. That's a white dial. That's an older one. This one is a stainless steel bezel. The new one is the white dial with a ceramic bezel, but looks very, very similar to that. That's way easier to read to me than stop here at the black dial. The black dial with the gray and silver, the things get real cluttered in there. That's just for me. Other people may not have that problem.
I think it's a little busy all around, but
the Daytona is busy. After I gave back the Daytona and I went back to my GMT, I was like, holy shit, I can fucking tell time again. Cause it was like the hands and the actual numbers were so clear.
Well, even the little, I don't know what they're called, the tiny dials in the middle, like
the subdials.
The subdials, they had to shrink all the hour marks.
Yes.
Which is not what they're called, but I don't care. Because those subdials are so big.
Hour markers is what they're called.
Oh, I got it.
Yeah.
It's that cluttered that they had to like shrink those to make room.
Yeah, I can't tell time on a Daytona. However, if you can get a white dial Daytona for sticker price, it's hard to go wrong with that because they are trading for over. And if you buy it and you don't like it, you can get your money back real quick and maybe some on top.
All right. Alex Arnaldus says, is a 2014 RS5 convertible worth the extra money over a 2014 S5 convertible?
Yes.
He likes the S5. Wants to know if the RS5 is worth more.
The RS5 has the fucking V8, dude. Yes. The RS5 has one of the most lovely engines of that period, whereas the S5... Is that still a V8 or is that the
twin six?
It's the supercharged six. That's not a good. I mean, it's a functional engine, but it's not an inspiring engine. You definitely want the RS5. Not to mention how many fucking RS5 convertibles did they make? Not a lot. Like, it's probably, is the S5 is the six, right?
3 liter V6.
Yeah. The RS5 is definitely worth it. Yes. Yes, go with the RS, sir. My first ever date that I took my now wife in was in an RS5 convertible.
Really?
Nardo gray.
I wonder if it's the, it'd be funny if it's the one he's buying. He's like, oh, it's going to be worth more money.
There's jizz all over it. No.
Probably.
No. There was no fucking in the RS5.
That's not a lot. There's not enough room.
Not for me. Fucking in cars is not really happening. Not anymore.
What about like a Sprinter van?
Yeah, definitely.
Trent says, is the 2 liter or is the 2 liter turbo or the 3.8 V6 better for a Genesis Coupe? I remember this car. We want it for a first tuner car. What trim is best? Ultimate, R spec, etc.
What I remember the most about the Genesis Coupe is that either engine, the post facelift was a drastic improvement.
Yes.
That was the big takeaway, is that you don't want a pre-facelift one. You want a post-facelift one.
I remember liking the V6 more. I thought it was a really good, just NA, nice, really responsive. And I drove a modified 2-liter turbo one, and it handled great. The only bad thing was there's zero steering feel.
Yeah.
It was like super numb. But it was fast in either form. I don't think you can go wrong. I kind of like the NA experience better. You'll get more power, ultimately, if you boost the crap out of the 2-liter, though.
I feel like a post-facelift V6 R-Spec manual is right where you want to be.
That's a good all-around car.
Yeah.
If you want to tune the engine, you won't get much out of it, as much out of a V6 as a turbo, but you know, you're starting higher up. So
unless someone makes a supercharger. Supercharger for that V6, that could be good.
Someone makes a blower for everything.
That could be good.
Yeah, get R-Spec, though. Get something with all the supporting mods so you don't break stuff.
Yeah.
This guy's getting ready to supercharge his first car. It's a 99 S10 2.2 liter with a 5-speed lowered. Should I buy the tuning software and try it myself or take it to someone smarter? This is such a great question.
Definitely.
For so many reasons.
I mean.
How cheap are used 2.2 liter engines? Because you'll probably blow it up if you do it yourself.
Supercharging a 2.2 Chevy S10?
Yeah. Super sport truck.
Oh my God.
Sport trucking.
Bro.
How's Florida?
I mean, I would, yeah. How's Florida this time of year? Take it to someone smarter.
I mean,
take it to someone smarter and then give them an extra 50 to show you how they do it.
I can't remember who, whatever. The good advice is if you want to like really learn to work on a car, buy a car that you don't need to drive.
Right.
And then do, like, if you want to learn how an engine works, buy a $400 car.
Yeah.
And just learn on that. But if this is like your baby, if you to have someone else tune it and watch,
yeah,
you could really mess it up.
Having said that, we met the New Zealanders that learned how to tune a Megasquirt computer themselves.
That's true.
Without, and it worked. Now, it wasn't a forced induction, it was just a regular old little V6, but like they figured it out and it worked. So
I think it depends on what kind of person you are.
Yeah.
Like I'm not detailed enough to read all of the like all the posts about how to tune a car, all the parameters you need, all the software.
Right.
Like, I would go, you know, this is probably good enough, and then I'd blow it up.
Yeah.
So if you're like me, have someone do it who knows what they're doing.
I would 1,000% have someone do it.
Let's see. Do you think the obscene price of motorsport these days means the death of the folk hero racing driver? Also, are you guys willing to give some writing feedback if I send some pieces your way?
Second part, yes. Matt@thesmokingtire.com. If it's good, I will happily tell you. If it's somewhere in the middle, I will critique it fairly. If it's really terrible, I'm going to tell you that too. Probably won't be, but I don't know. I don't know what motorsport costs back in the day. I don't know if guys racing Corvettes at Bridgehampton in the 60s, if those were really rich guys. Like I'd never really thought about it, actually. So I can't accurately say, like, oh shit, racing is so much more expensive today. Now, I can say that in a lot of ways, racing's more expensive because the cars are way safer and the standards are way higher. Track days are expensive in part because you have to pay for an ambulance and a fire crew to be there. That sounds annoying until you need them. You know, roll cages and halon systems sound annoying until you need them. Arm restraints sound annoying until you need them, you know.
I wonder if the regulations that have been put in place for racing have made, like, you can't build your own race car the way you maybe could back in the 70s or 80s. Like, engines were, you know, engines were simpler, so, like, you could have a hobbyist that could rebuild their entire engine and hot rod it a bit. And now, if those engines are either locked up because it's a spec series or everything's so digital... Like, you're not going to take your GT4 home and go, I'm going to tweak some shit.
Yeah, you know? But, like, our... Yeah, but that's professional race. Like, that didn't happen in professional race cars, did it? Did that happen? Like,
well, it depends on the series we're talking about.
I think
about.
There's more affordable ways to race cars now than there have ever been. From autocross to local drag racing, yep, to dirt track to karting to sim racing. I know that's not racing cars. To the cheap endurance racing that I do, which is still not that cheap, but relatively, you know, compared to the Celine S1 weekend. You
right.
So weekend race with a Celine S1, $30,000. Weekend seat in a competitive AER car, $3,000. I mean, you know, yes, racing is very expensive, but like, I think there's also a lot of affordable ways to go
there
racing.
Are.
I mean, go to Grid Life. A lot of these guys, I mean, you know.
Time Attack.
Time Attack
racing. That's like
racing
the Garage Hero kind of motorsport.
Yeah.
At least with the way lap times are concerned.
And some of the lower rungs of the drift scene. Local, you know, local regional drifting events, too, are super, super grassroots.
There was a guy that Sam was telling me the story. I forget the guy's name, but he got into autocrossing and he bought like a used S2000 or something, and he did so well running a Honda product, and he was very good at like promoting mm-hmm. in like Instagram and social media, but he won like the SCCA Nationals, you know, for a couple of years, and to the point where Honda then gave him like a Civic Si
yeah.
to build and run at the Nationals again. So like that's someone who basically built their own race following
yeah.
and like ran a motorsport, and they kind of became a quote sponsored driver.
Yeah, I think who was here? Scott Pruitt. When he was here, he said, you know, there's maybe 100 paid drives globally.
Crazy.
And so, and there's thousands and thousands of people competing for those drives. And so, you know, racing is very, very, very expensive, obviously, as are a bunch of other sports and hobbies and whatever. What was there a question? I mean, what was the
just, do we think motorsports too expensive so that, like, you won't have the folk hero racing driver? I don't know. My brain thinks of, like, only because the movie's recent, is like Kevin Miles, who is
Ken
like
Miles?
Oh, Ken Miles, like, oh, you're a mechanic, you yeah. run to this guy, and now you're so good that they put you in this thing. But
yeah,
that's probably gone.
I think you do see some of that. You just, a lot of times they don't make it to Le Mans. You know, you see it in James Houghton, who is the dude from Grid Life who broke the track record in Integra. You know what I mean? You see, like, fucking lunatics like that, where, you know, he's got sponsors. Yeah, like, he's not, like, a nobody by any means. He's a somebody in that community, and every time he goes out, people are fucking jaws dropped. I mean, James Houghton, to me, or Will All Young in his crazy 7-horsepower Civic, or some of these guys who are running regional and global Time Attack and stuff like that in their Civic Type Rs or their Z06s with the big aero and shit, you know. But James Houghton comes to mind as being a dude who works on the car, you know, trailers it himself, you know, runs these crazy numbers, you know, makes so much power that he grenades a gearbox every 3 laps and just swaps them out. You know, I think those people do exist. I just don't think they get, you know, I don't think they make it into national. Like, let's look at James as an example. Like, where would he go? You know, I don't even think, as good as he is, the records he sets, the craziness of watching him drive, he's obviously a talented engineer, a talented builder, wrench, and driver. But, like, what scout is looking for that person to go, I'm going to put you on my professional racing team? I'm not sure what that process is. Like, who's looking for that guy? Who's covering that guy?
It's a good question. Who pulls from Time Attack? Because Time Attack yeah. is, you know, 1-2 laps as fast as possible. It's quality laps, basically.
Yeah.
And you're also building the thing yourself. I don't, I'm sure there are some teams where some the engineer builds the car and he has a hot shoe that he likes that is, you know, is crazier and will set the better lap. But there's not many sports that would that kind of attack skill applies to.
I mean,
it's almost like a Pikes Peak thing. But if you were going to pull someone into Pikes Peak, you pull them from people that race Pikes Peak, which is another great thing where people can go build a car and enter, like, you know, their class and be a kind of a legend in their class.
Yeah. It's interesting. Interesting question. I think there are those garage heroes out there, but I think a lot of them are in the series that you don't read about in the major publications. Yeah.
Yeah. Would you rather drive a forklift nonstop from LA to New York and back? You can stop to sleep.
It's got to be in back.
Or have the quarter mile at a time quote from Fast and Furious tattooed on your neck. What size font?
Good question. Good question.
I'm going to use the loophole.
Loophole
I'm
there.
I'm going to say size 1 font. I'm going tattoo.
I'll go with the tattoo in a size 3 font. Yep.
Great.
I'll get the tattoo in olive colored ink.
Great idea. Flesh tone. Yeah. Or white ink. That doesn't show up. It doesn't last at all.
Yeah.
Bingo. Definitely not doing that drive.
No, but think of that forklift thing. Like when I had to do that bird scooter test for Jalopnik and I came up with like a 3 mile course. That was going to be my course. And then some of those scooters were restricted to 2.8 miles an hour. And so I'm just sitting there going 2.8. It's so hard to go 2.8 on a scooter because you're like, you lose your gyro.
Oh, yeah.
So that made me think about it, the forklift
thing. Tattoo. Someone's from Vancouver. They said, what were some of your favorite spots when you visited?
I'm so sorry. I don't remember the name of anything. Vancouver was so great. I stayed in this great hotel next to some amazing, amazing breakfast spot. Like one of the best breakfasts I've ever fucking had. We just loved walking around and we had some great meals, some really cool cocktail bars. But we just wandered and found what we found, and I honestly do not remember the name of anything, but I cannot recommend Vancouver enough as a destination. What a great place. And Whistler as well. Fuck yeah. That mountain, oh my God, was that mountain serious.
That was
the most, the most serious mountain I've ever skied.
So
crazy.
Good. I told people let's stop asking new super chat questions because we have enough to get through.
Thank you.
What do we think of the Rivian? Good or vaporware?
Did you see the video today it doing the tank spins? That's pretty awesome.
Well, that's what's cool about electric motors is you can control them. I think they work. They can go as fast backwards as forwards unless you put a governor on it. So
axis spins are good, and a vehicle demonstrating those is a good example of a video, it's a visual promoting your product in which you have made up a game that you do not have to cheat at.
And that you succeed at, unlike bulletproof Windows.
Succeed at the game.
It's turning real quick.
I mean, it seems like Rivians are a real thing. I don't think it's a vaporware. You think it's, does someone suggest vaporware? I don't think it's vaporware.
Someone on the internet will suggest something.
I think we've seen quite a few prototypes. I think they've got real backing from Ford. They've got money. I don't think it's vaporware.
It wouldn't surprise me if, you know, they're basically Ford's test bed now.
Yeah.
And if they build this and people like it and it works well, Ford could always buy them or, probably license some of their tech or something like that.
I mean, that's
cool.
With the exception of being electric, I mean, that looks like a pretty normal vehicle.
Good looking truck.
Yeah.
I think electricity, you know, has lots of torque and all the things. And if you have decent range.
The rear, the back door and rear and window are a little bit Jeep Renegade-y for me, but besides that, it's okay. But
I'm into it. I think off-roading silently would be really cool.
I think off-roading silently would be cool too.
Yeah.
Dun, dun, dun. What else you got?
Someone is into cars and watches. They recently bought a 2015 Mazda 3 manual and a Seiko Alpinist.
Oh, Alpinists are a very good watch.
They're just saying, keep up the good work and cheers from Toronto. Thank you very much.
If you dress like a college professor or hipster, you don't go in the water very often and your wrist is on the smaller side, you should get a Seiko Alpinist. It is a very, very nice watch that is very affordable. And the green dial, A-L-P-I-N-I-S-T. And you'll get a lot of internet cred. It's a very, like, An Alpinist is a very cool watch on the internet. You get a lot of on the Reddit watches section. That's not. I don't know if I.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a good looking watch. Anyway. Merry Christmas.
Let's see. Happy holidays. Any podcast guest goals for 2020? This person's hoping we get Ed Bullion, Mighty Car Mods, Hoovy, Doug, and Arn. Mighty Car Mods would be awesome. Those guys, I don't know how often they come here.
I'm pretty sure all those people know that they have open invites if they're in LA.
Yeah, it's just they're not always in LA. They're not often in LA.
All those people live in other places.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's all if you're a member of the automotive press with big followings like those people, you pretty much all the people have been on the show before except Mighty Car Mods, right? Ed Bullion, yeah, I don't
Ed
think
has. Not.
He has an invite too. I know Ed. He asked me to come do his VinWiki shit, but he's in Atlanta. So I was like, all right, I've got to wait.
Yeah, wait until Porsche has an event out there.
I need to make, there's like a couple places I need to make rounds. I need to make a UK round because I got to see Harris. I got to do Caffeine and Machine. I got to see Tuttle. I've got to do a few things in the UK. Aston Martin, I wanted to go over there. And then I wanted to go to Atlanta to do a Crown and Caliber thing, to do a new thing with Lee's new suspensions on his Safaris. And whatever the fuck he just said.
What are his new suspensions? What's he doing?
My car has the Gen 1 suspension, which is Elephant Racing. He then worked with a company called Motion Control mm-hmm. to develop a Gen 2 suspension, which he tried to fucking sell me within a month of me taking delivery of my car. And I was like, are you fucking kidding me right now? But no, I said that if I break my suspension, I will get the new one. Apparently, the new one is a little more durable for jumping.
Oh.
That's what it is.
Well, you need that.
Of course I need that. So I said if I break mine, I'll get the upgrade, but I think I'm okay for now.
Wow.
I did just reserve my spot for the West Coast Safari Rally, which is the first week of June from Phoenix to Las Vegas off-road.
Sick. Mm-hmm. Ooh, that'll be good.
Mm-hmm. That will be excellent.
All right. Andrew McGee has a Beat 997. He doesn't want to track it, but he wants a better understanding of vehicle dynamics. Are the PEC experiences a good investment? I think absolutely.
I think they are.
Driving schools, they have every flavor you could want.
Yeah.
And the instructors are super legit.
Yeah. And if you want to, they do lose surface a lot between the wet and the slick track and stuff like that. And so mm-hmm. you can get a loose surface practice in a very low-risk environment, in their cars.
Someone says, thoughts of having daily driven exotics on the podcast. I saw them driving in downtown LA once randomly. I was like, what are these stickered-up Lambos and stuff? And then it was, oh, they were driving to Vegas. That's as much as I know about them.
That's you just said the thing. The thing about daily driven exotics are, who cares? Not the channel. I've never watched it. I don't know. But like, oh my God, you telling me you drove a Ferrari 488 every day? The sacrifice you must be making for the car gods. It's like, these are luxury cars. Like,
if it's Porsche GT1, then yeah. You know, they can come talk to us about it. I don't know. I haven't watched their channel, to be honest.
Yeah, I have no idea.
Thoughts on Camisa's job with the Simi? I think they're making really funny, cool content. Like, have you seen that stuff?
Which one?
Jason Camisa,
yeah,
you know he makes videos for this company called Issimi.
Yeah, what is it? It's just videos, right? He's just making car videos.
Yeah, some of them are like, you know, at a desk talking about tech and here's how things work, and they're like sarcastic and shit talky. I think they're great.
I haven't watched them because I don't watch videos on the internet. I'm sorry, it's not you, it's me.
Yeah, it takes a lot of time.
Well, I just
it does. Like I watch very little.
Yeah.
For that reason.
Like, you know how people watch our videos because it's like their escape from whatever the fuck they're doing with their day? That's our videos is what I'm doing with our day.
Right. Yeah.
my escape is to watch my cats run around my house.
Yeah. I have 1.6 jobs and then I try to do things also. And so I don't watch that much stuff. But the stuff I watch from Jason that's on Instagram TV is really funny and educational.
I mean, anything Jason does is going to be good.
Yeah.
I support it. I just haven't seen it.
Wheels for a 2019 Lunar Rock RAV4? I don't even understand that question. For $2?
Sorry.
I don't know.
Moving on.
Wheels that hold tires.
Aren't they made of wire? They're made of like chicken wire and shit on the Lunar Rover. The wheels are made of metal.
Oh, those things.
It's a Lunar Rover. Didn't he say Lunar Rover?
He said Lunar Rock RAV4.
What does that mean? Lunar rock?
I don't know.
I'm sorry. We don't have time for that.
Which Seiko of Carl's was auctioned off?
Oh, it was the Mount Fuji. Okay. It was a Mount Fuji, and I got into a bidding war with first this one other dude and then Guy Fieri, and Guy ended up taking it home. And then he texted me later, and he was like, I'll sell it to you. I didn't.
That's fast.
The watch of Carl's that I actually really wanted was his turtle on the strap code, and his assistant Gloria got that, and she organized many things. I was not about to ask her for it, but I have my gold Seiko on the strap code that Carl advised me to buy, and Carl gave me a G-Shock. When we first met, he gave me a G-Shock, which I'm keeping forever. So
cool.
I do have a watch of Carl's.
What of Rogan's cars did you like in particular?
His Land Cruiser is the jam.
Yeah, it is.
John Ward, it's not an icon Land Cruiser, but the other half of the business icon is called TLC, Toyota Land Cruisers, and they just restore Land Cruisers to the quality of an icon, but without that sort of icon branding. And so that's Joe's Land Cruiser. Is it a blown LS7 or is it an LSA?
It's a, a supercharged LS. I don't remember.
Probably
which
an
one.
LSA, a CTSV engine.
That'd be the smart one to go with. There's a full video on Icon's YouTube channel if you want to watch it. We're not going to play it, obviously, but.
That is really nice. It has Lexus LS seats and just really it's got a bunch of accessories on it, but in general it's very understated and cool.
It is.
And I'm a big fan of that.
Yeah. It's really nice. Okay. John Dempsey says thanks for a great year. He likes his Long Road Racing Ultimate MX-5.
Oh, cool.
Very cool. And any tips on combating interior plastics rattling? Don't buy a German car.
I mean,
they usually rattle because the clips that hold them in place start to get brittle and break. That's usually why that things happen. So you're just gonna have to buy the clips and replace them.
Or a lot of times I'll freak out about rattles and then I'll realize that it's not the car, it's the stuff in the car.
Good point.
It's like there's change or there's little shit in the glove box or whatever. And if I really go through the car and really clean out everything and then go drive it, 95% of the rattles are gone.
Very true.
That happens to me more often than I'm ashamed, than I'm okay admitting.
No, me too. Yeah. I used to go, what's that clunk or something? And Musto would be like, did you take everything out of the car? Like, what are you talking about? He's like,
it's a fucking marker in your glove box, you idiot. You know,
Someone says, have we tried kayaking shoes for driving shoes? No. But they make driving shoes. They're probably just like the finger toe shoes.
Barefoot people constantly try and suggest replacements to me for driving barefoot. There isn't one. Barefoot is awesome. Like, you have really good pedal feel. I can heel toe better than like any pair of shoes when I'm just barefoot. Like, it's a great way to like practice. Are those kayaking shoes? Get the fuck out of here. That's not doing nothing.
It seems like there's lots of options for kayaking shoes.
Those are bigger than racing shoes. Those are bigger than driving shoes. That's stupid.
It's like surf booties. I don't know.
No, barefoot in California, we wear flip flops. Kick them off. You drive barefoot. It's not that weird.
I like driving with flip flops.
You leave the flip flops on?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't. Because the heel feels good. The heel drags on the floor for me.
Mine fits right, but I don't know. Driving barefoot. I don't know. I don't like it. Like the rubbing on the bottom of my foot.
I guess some people aren't into it, and the people who suggest.
I understand the benefit completely, and the pedal feel obviously is better. I just don't. Friction.
I wouldn't rather drive barefoot. That's annoying to take your shoes on and off every time. But like, it's not the worst solution. Like, I don't really mind it for a sports car. Like, it's especially in California. Like, it's warm and I wear flip flops a bunch. Like, whatever.
True. Ryan Wormeling has chartered his first boat from BVI.
Oh, nice.
It's two of them. Any tips for provisions?
Fucking liquor and weed.
Buy less beer than you think you'll need.
Yeah.
We bought way too much. We had like crates of it.
Yeah.
And we ended up with a lot of extra.
Beer takes up a lot of space. Liquor is very alcohol dense.
It's very efficient.
Yeah. So you can get liquor and then change up your mixers. That's what I would advise. Have plenty of music. Have lots of music ready.
We bought too much backup food, I remember. We bought a lot of like interesting rice noodle things, which looked really good, and we didn't use very many of them because we ended up stopping. I mean, it depends on what country you're in.
Yeah.
But we ended up stopping for dinner a lot or cooking on the boat. So have some backup food, but you don't have, probably have to go as crazy as you think.
Yeah. And my main advice is, like, if you're in the BVI, I'm guessing you probably chartered from the Moorings or Sunsail, which is the company that we use, the Moorings. That book they give you, the book of, like, you will anchor here in 10 meters of water, not here in 50, like, that book was gold. And yes. If you follow the book, you're great. And if you think you're smarter than the book, you'll find out very quickly how fucking wrong you are.
Very, very, very true. Just read the book.
Yeah.
Carry a lot of water.
No, but chartering sailboats, I mean, is some of the best way. It's the best way to see a country. I mean, it's amazing. And the BVI, I've sailed there for... I sailed there all through my youth. So, like, my favorite place to go in BVI is Joost Van Dyke and Anegada. Joost Van Dyke is the most fun party island. Anegada.
Sounds like a DJ.
There is, actually. There's a good club there. It's kind of fun. The Bitter End Yacht Club. Best fucking pina colada in the world is the Bitter End Yacht Club on Virgin Gorda. Joost, nice. How did you spell Joost Van Dyke?
I spelled it like the race team.
Yeah. Joost Van Dyke is a really lovely place.
Yeah, no shit. Look at this.
Yeah. Like, so I have partied in that harbor many, many times. That's in the British Virgin Islands, which is a lovely place to go sailing.
Thoughts on a 500 horsepower supercharged 07 V8 Vantage for $15,000.
What is wrong with it? Yes. I'm guessing a lot.
Because a stock Vantage is 30 for 50.
I mean, a beat V8 Vantage. A beat one. Is 30 grand. Like, the most beat that a Vantage would really be is 30 grand.
Run from this.
Yeah, that car is that's a scam, or that's broken, or there's something drastically wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's see. There's a 94 lime green Delica on Craigslist in LA right now. Mm. Thoughts compared to ours? Oh, we have to go find it.
Well, I mean, I don't know. Do we have to go find this fucking thing? Listen, Delicas are pretty rad. I have had a really good time with ours so far. They're not fast. They are they're quite slow. That's not lime green, is it?
No.
No. Where's that one?
This one's kind of bluish.
That one's in Topanga?
Yeah.
Oh, that one's really nice. Someone should buy this one. This one's what year is that? 91, 92?
L300.
L300 is what I have an L300, which is the boxy
93.
One. There's the L in 94. They went to the L400, which is a little more roundy round. This one looks pretty clean. I like the blue and the gray.
Yeah.
This one also has the crystal light roof, which is the glass roof. Mine does not have the crystal light roof. If you can avoid it, would probably not get it.
You say it weighs more and it heats the car up?
Yeah, the car gets hot and it's like a couple hundred pounds of glass up on the roof.
It's a lot.
And not really in a place you want it. So mine is does not have a crystal light roof.
I like it. This has like external bash bar kind of on.
Mine has that. That's a step.
Is that too?
That's a step. Yeah.
That's a step?
Yeah, it's a step to get up there. Mine has those. Shit. Yeah, and I blasted mine in the appropriate gray color.
This one they want 14 grand.
How many kilometers are on it?
Shock starters, 165,000 kilometers on it.
Well,
it's got a new timing belt, water pump.
So it's had the timing belt service.
Yeah, service less than 100 miles ago.
All right, there you go.
Might be cool.
That one's in LA. I mean, look, the Delica L300, other than being slow, which it is, the top speed is 75 miles an hour. Besides that, it's fucking cool. Like,
they are cool.
Ours
I didn't
is
get
so
it,
cool.
But when I rode in it, it was like, this feels spacious, but also compact enough to maneuver in the city.
Yeah.
And you could probably off-road the crap out of it just for a little overlanding.
Yes.
And it'd be really fun.
Yeah, the captain's chairs are great. The air conditioning is ice cold. I had the timing belt service done on it. It was like $300. And it's very fuel efficient, and it's comfortable. You know, and it's cool. We get stopped a lot. Like, whoa, what the fuck is that? We get a lot of thumbs up from people. Like, it's a lot of cool for not a lot of money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a lot of function for not a lot of money. Yeah. Like, it's got both.
Yeah. Like, I'm straight going to use it as an airport shuttle. So.
I would take it camping. For sure.
You could take it camping for sure. You can take the seats out pretty easily.
Put the mattress in the back.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Previa move. All right. These are the last two. Someone says, Caterman, with your own money, what would you be buying?
Does that mean cater him?
I guess so, but I don't know what caterman would mean. Are we buying small alligators?
What does
that
mean?
A caiman.
What?
I don't know. I'm just fucking with them.
What does that say?
It says Caterman.
With your own money, what should you be buying? I'm sorry, we can't even.
I can't decipher this. This guy. Yeah, Daniel, we know. It's 15 grand for the. Oh, 15,000 for the supercharger for the Vantage, not for the whole car.
Okay, sorry about that. So for 15K, you can get a V8 Vantage supercharger kit and get 500 horsepower out of it. All right. I would look for V12 Vantages first. I don't know anything about a supercharger. Is that a Roots style? What is? How does that look, Zach?
No, it's the...
Centrifugal?
Centrifugal.
I don't know. 550 horsepower. I've not really heard of anyone running one of these before.
Vortec. Okay, well, Vortec makes a kit.
Mm-hmm.
Which is $2,500.
Dollars?
Yeah. I mean, that's for just the blower. It's the V3 SI.
Yeah.
And you need all the other things to go with it. So, I don't know.
I mean, I'm not like anti. I think the motor would probably take it. You know, the clutch and gearbox, I'm not really sure. Maybe. I don't know if it's the same setup that gets used for the 12. But like, I'd really rather have a 12.
The 12S is so ridiculous and fun, and it'll hold its value.
Yeah.
It's like, it's a pretty unique experience. It
yeah,
really
like if
is.
You put a supercharger on a V8 Vantage, all of that money is gone.
Yeah.
Like you get the rewards of driving a faster car, but like you're not going to get any money out of that when you go to sell it. Whereas if you get a 12, it's more upfront, but you don't have to do anything, and you get a lot more of that money back when you get out of it later.
Yeah. Definitely.
So I wouldn't go into an exotic car with a plan to tune it further. I would probably just buy a higher performing exotic car.
I would have to have, I'd have to have quite a, because I really love this car, but I'd have to have quite a bit of money before I was going to add 150 horsepower to it, and it might break, the value might go down. Like it would have, I'd have to know I'm throwing it away.
Yeah.
And I'd have to love the car so much, and I just want it to be way fast and surprise people. And I think with this, you jump up to the V12 and you have the same experience you're trying to get, and it's going to retain its value, mm-hmm. and be more sought after, it's and sound better, etc., etc.
I agree. A lot of unknowns there, you know. But I would get it if he had the car. I mean, loved this car. I want this car. I just want more power. I get it. But if the plan is to go in, I wouldn't do it. I would say no.
All right, last question. Ashley Evans asked us, what tuner is our favorite? They said Brabus, Novatec. I actually haven't driven a car by either one of them. Almost forget Novatec exists.
Yeah, I've never driven a Novatec car.
No.
Roof, probably. If we can call Roof a tuner, I have to say Roof has got to be my favorite tuner.
I don't think I have a favorite. I think I like some cars from each one, and I don't pit them against each other, and I like what they all do.
Yeah. No. I mean, I think Roof, to me, is a kind of company where I don't even have to question it. You know what I mean? It's like if they're building a product, I go, that's probably going to be very good, isn't it?
True.
I don't really have to question that. So
I feel that way about Carbon. I felt that way about, you know,
Dynan. Yeah. Dynan's got a good.
Yeah. Anyone that makes a really good product that you can trust, I think I like them. And you know, they usually are all different flavors. They're from different, you know, different OEMs. Yeah. So they work on different OEMs. So they're all a little bit different.
Yeah.
All right.
That was cool. That's a show. I hope everybody had a good Christmas. I don't know if we're going to record one the next, probably next week, right? Monday, maybe. But thank you for participating. I appreciate it. I think my caffeine kicked in and I got over the itis of the ramen.
You did.
Pretty quickly. Do I have to plug anything else? I don't know offhand.
You don't have any new shirts up? Watch the videos, all that stuff?
Yeah. I'm going to be giving away a Lego Bugatti. Or a Lego 911 RSR, which is pretty cool. So follow me on Instagram for that. That's it. I'll see you guys soon. The Smoking Tire Podcast is powered by Shout Engine. Get your own damn podcast at shoutengine.com. It's easy. All you need is a microphone, a connection to the internet, and ideally something to say. See y'all later.